Long Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome.
Evening.
Good evening.
Eerie House.
Hello.
Tiny
Hi.
Radio.
Hi. Hello.
What the hell? Anyway, good evening. Welcome to Eerie House, Oldie Timey Radio. I'm some guy, I don't know, Dale Kay from Spook Show, I guess, here along with...
I think I'm Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
And
I forgot he's here with... on the count. It is I, Gar the Ghoul. I haven't been here for lately.
For lately?
Okay, for lately.
You haven't fully identified
three
yourself,
or four,
sir.
I give up. I'm stopping.
Okay. I heard you haven't fully identified yourself, sir. I did not hear any Blaze after your name.
Blaze?
How do I know
it's
Blaze. You? That's
it is I, Gar the Ghoul. Blaze. I haven't been here for lately. There we go.
I feel much better. Thank you. Oh,
it's
a load
it's
off
like
my
a good...
mind.
Burp or something. Yeah, okay. Anyway.
I feel better, too, because I've got a bowl of ice cream in front of me, so, you know.
Ah,
that's my excuse.
The secret
Rocky
to world
Road?
Peace.
Yeah, the secret to world peace is ice cream. Yes.
Just ice cream. Rocky Moose Road?
Tracks.
Yep.
Moose
Whatever
Moose
your
tracks.
Favorite flavor is the road
Moose
to peace. Because everybody can have. Everyone has a different opinion, and everyone has their own favorite ice cream. So,
I got lost.
You know?
What flavor do you like, Dave?
Actually, one of my favorites. I really like the old chocolate marshmallow. That's,
ooh.
I do like that, yeah.
That's really close to Rocky Road.
It is close to Rocky Road, but they throw the nuts in there in Rocky Road, and I'm nuts enough already.
Then, you know,
I don't need
but
that.
You know, but you know, those people that
those
like that
people.
Pistachio ice cream, they should be banned from the internet. Forever and ever.
Yeah.
Stop talking about yourself like that, Dale. Stop that.
Oh.
Stop that.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I do like pistachios. Wait.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I don't have anything against you. You know what gets me is, and I've never enjoyed this, but I've tried it once, and I was like, it would seem like the perfect mix, but I can't stand coffee ice cream.
Good. You shouldn't. You were not intended to.
Yeah. But I like.
Hey, anybody remember?
Cherries in my ice cream?
Do.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Cherry ice cream.
I also like Buckeye Blast. That's cool.
Buckeye
Blast.
I don't know that one.
You know what they ought to make? Ice cream that tastes just like when you lick a stamp. There's a segue. Now, there was a segue worth digging for.
Gumberry flavor.
Yeah. I tried that once, but I became addicted to licking stamps, and I just couldn't afford that. So thank goodness they got the self-stick stamps now. They have
new rubber cement flavored ice cream. There you go.
Eerie House Dairy now presenting postage stamp ice cream, and
postage
we got it tonight
stamp ice cream.
All of our radio programs got to do with. What he was talking about for lately.
And what does it say on every carton? You can lick any president you want. That's right.
Ooh,
right on every
I can taste the old. Count them, three great radio programs tonight. One, a show I don't recall us having before, A Man Called X, is that right?
We have never aired that. Bringing the wonderful, amazing Mr. Herbert Marshall when we get that show. I'll tell you why this man is so stinking amazing.
Good.
Am I delusional? That's a loaded question, but I think
sure
we've done
is.
A Man Called X.
No, I don't think we have. I'm pretty sure
really?
We haven't.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm delusional. All right. I'll agree.
I think we did a Bulldog Drummond. I think we'd have done one Bulldog Drummond, which this show is sometimes compared to. But actually, in many ways, it's closer to a Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment than Bulldog Drummond.
Yep. We also got Theater 5 and Nightbeat coming up tonight as well.
Yes.
Yeah, Theater 5 is interesting because that's That's a cross between science fiction and comedy.
That okay. See, I can't remember the word, but I take it against that particular episode because some kid walked up to the writer and they had a slide whistle, and the guy's like, I'm going to write an entire episode all about slide whistles. And it's like, the heck is wrong with you? That's not radio. I've got mine somewhere.
I would think you would be proud that they use the slide whistle in a radio production like that.
Well, no, because they have to use the gar whistle. It's a gary slide. Yep, you know.
There you go.
We love ours.
We got
to make a radio program all about it. How dare they?
Gang, the next Erie House recording will do dueling slide whistles. But before we get exactly, but before we do that, look. We should probably do, some old-time radio, like the name of the program. And
oh, yeah. On the marquee. Blah, blah.
It does. Why not? It's a virtual marquee.
It is. First it says ice cream, then it says something about presidents, and then licking, and then radio.
Right.
Right? Okay.
And that's why we're here.
That's why we're here.
To lick the
why.
I'm not even on the couch.
I just thought we were on a conference call. Yeah.
Oh.
Sort of are. We sort of are.
sort of are. I need to get on the page. I don't know who's there.
And it's funny you mentioned licking presidents like on stamps.
Only in passing.
If you're watching
it's not a hobby.
If you're watching the slideshow at all.
Blog Talk Radio.
Is anybody familiar with the Universal Monster stamps that they came out with time ago?
Yeah, I've got some. Around here somewhere.
I never got mine. I'm going to have to dig on eBay or something, and I have to get
I'll mail you mine.
No. Don't put them on an envelope.
There we go.
They're collectible, man.
Sidebar, Fogs Bane and good old Bob are here.
Coming in live. Yep.
Hey, see what happens when you find out when you log on, Gar?
I know. Yeah.
Amazing. Thanks for joining us.
Ooh. I was making coffee, all right? Coffee-flavored granola bars.
Frankly, it sounds like you're bathing in it, but I digress.
But, hey, let's digress together.
I have nothing against a good coffee bath, although when I tried it last time, I gave myself third-degree burns. Anyway.
That's true. That's true, yeah.
It is true.
Yes,
that's
it
right,
is.
Where shall we start? How about the new to the
Did
channel program from a man called X? This one's
man
titled.
X.
Yeah, it's a titled Hey Penny Stamp.
Oh. Hey Penny Stamp, yeah. Good old man called X with Herbert Marshall started off as a summer series in 1944, I believe it was. Let me see. 1944. It ran for so many weeks, and then kind of went on to get its regular own time slot, and went until May 20th, 1952. The episode we have is just before the show went off the air, but an interesting show with the amazing Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Not to be confused with Thurgood, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who was a stage actor, and then he was chosen for a UK and let's see what was it? A UK and a Canadian touring troupe of the play Brewster's Million. So we've been made into a couple times here, once early on, and then later on with John Candy and Richard Pryor. The amazing thing is when the World War I was announced, they all went back to the UK. He joined the military and eventually got shot in the knee by a sniper. I don't know what the guy was aiming at, but they got his knee, and eventually he actually had his leg amputated. You never knew it because he went on to be in a ton of movies. And,
well, let's hope they were aiming for the knee.
Yeah, let's hope they were, but, you know, I mean, this sharpshooter must have needed glasses or something. I don't know.
Well,
but,
See, I never knew that before the show. I guess you could say I was stunned.
You were stunned, yes. But and he did a ton of radio, which we could talk about as we get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, we got an original broadcast date on this one?
August 12th, 1938.
Listen to Herbert Marshall as the man called X. Wherever there is mystery, adventure, intrigue, in all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find the man called X. From the oil fields of Iran to the fertile delta of the Nile, the smoldering coals of ancient hatreds, of militant nationalism, threatened to burst into a fiery inferno that could well be the start of World War III. And who would there be to say whether such a flaming holocaust came into being accidentally or was deliberately ignited as a weapon of destruction aimed at the Western democracies? Time is 9:45 p.m. The place, a dark, crooked alleyway near the dock area of Cairo. The furtive figure of a man moves cautiously, hesitatingly, through the black enveloping shadows of the Egyptian night.
Why do I do these things anyway? A guy could get his throat cut out here, and for what? A few measly bucks. Believe me, if it wasn't for that, I'd never do it. Where is Uncle Ahmed, anyways? He said he'd meet me here. Where is he? Where is Cousin Ismail? Oh, where is anybody?
Right behind the fenders.
Who? Oh, Uncle Ahmed, it's so dark for a minute. I thought you were somebody else. Oh. You are somebody else.
Quiet, Zellschmidt. That is the blade of a knife you feel pressing against your throat.
It is.
Listen. There is a certain man aboard the British cruiser Hellenic out in the harbor. A certain Pasha Kent Thurston. He must board the Cairo Port Said Express at midnight, compartment C3. With him, he must have 100,000 pounds sterling. Repeat that.
Cairo Port Said Express, midnight, compartment C3. 100,000 pounds sterling?
You will see that he is there with the money. Otherwise, your life will be forfeit.
But what if he don't want to go?
He will go, Zellschmidt. When you tell him that with the 100,000 pounds, he will be able to purchase a halfpenny stamp.
This story of Zellschmidt sounds rather like a weirdie, doesn't it, Ken? Could be a trap, you know.
I doubt it, Jim. I have a hunch Pagon and his uncle Ahmed could help us out on this. I think they've done it.
And Zellschmidt said this knife-wielding character did mention a halfpenny stamp, but is it the one we're after?
Well, it has to be. What other stamp could possibly be worth 100,000 pounds?
Yes, 20 times that if it contains the data we want. Then how are we to find out?
Easy. I'll be aboard the Cairo Port Said Express at midnight.
Might take a bit of doing. The Egyptians aren't very partial to us at this moment, you know.
I'll do a bit of disguise, change clothes, go as an Egyptian merchant.
And I'll wager your throat cut before you leave the station.
I'll let you know how I come out.
No, hold on, Ken. You might be decent enough to wait until I get my hat. I'm going with you. Sure this is the right car, Ken?
Yeah, we have compartment C5, C4. Here we are, C3.
Come in, please, gentlemen. Come in. There's more than enough room for all of us.
Who are you?
My name is Touros, gentlemen. Dimetro Touros.
This happens to be a private compartment, Mr. Touros. Or didn't you know?
Oh, yes, yes, I was quite aware of that fact. I have been waiting for you, Mr. Thurston, and for Commander Stevens.
Yeah, how do you know who we are?
I have connections, sir, but that is not important now.
What is?
The fact, sir, that I am a philatelist, a stamp collector, and my reason for being here is the same as yours, a certain halfpenny stamp.
What stamp is that?
Gentlemen, some 5 years ago, a British intelligence agent managed to infiltrate into a certain organization, a Middle East Strategy Committee, whose orders came from a city which might well be called Moscow. Am I correct, Commander Stevens?
You were saying something about a stamp, Mr. Touros.
Yes. That agent managed to acquire quite a fund of information about this committee, such as its concern with the Iranian oil situation, its interest in the anti-British riots in Egypt, and he inscribed it all, every fact, name, place, upon the back of a halfpenny stamp.
Oh, come now, Touros. One could hardly write a phone number on the back of a stamp, let alone all that data you're mentioning.
As you know, the agent was a specially trained calligrapher, one who could inscribe the Lord's Prayer on the head of a pin.
So?
The agent was arrested by the committee and murdered. The stamp disappeared. It is now somewhere in Egypt, avidly being sought by Russian agents, by British agents, by certain Arabian potentates.
And by Dimitro Touros.
Yes, as you say, Mr. Thurston, by Dimitro Touros.
What's your interest in it?
Strictly financial. That stamp is worth a great deal of money to the interested parties I have mentioned. Here, one of my cards. I trust you will visit me one day soon at my home in Port Said. Thank you, gentlemen. Good night.
Well, now what you make of that, Ken?
One thing's for sure. Our friend Touros is well informed about that halfpenny stamp. But he's not the man we came to meet.
What makes you think that?
Those bloodstains on the carpet.
Bloodstains on the... Yes. Right next to that window seat. What in the world?
There's luggage space under that seat. Let's take a look.
Yes, indeed. You think he was the man we were going to meet?
Yes.
And then who slipped that knife into him? Touros?
Could be.
Then Touros must have the stamp.
I doubt it.
Why?
He could try to make a deal with us all. He could claim he entered the compartment by accident.
And it must be somebody else aboard the train. Maybe anybody.
Yeah.
May we come in, gentlemen?
Well, you're in. What do you want?
I am Major Osman Kamal, Egyptian military police. The men in the corridor are my agents. Do not attempt resistance, please.
What's your interest in us?
The corpse under that seat makes the answer superfluous. However, you are both under arrest for murder. Raise your hands, please.
Ken,
raise them.
Better do as it says, Jim. After all, it makes it easier to reach the emergency cord.
Do not pull that if they do not...
Get the door, Jim.
I've got it.
What about the Major? Knocked off his feet. I'll make sure he stays that way.
Touch of genius, Ken, pulling an emergency cord. There's certainly no time to mess around with a murder charge, but where do we go from here?
Port Said.
Port Said?
If the stamp's aboard this train, that's where it's headed.
The window, Jim. We'll get out that way. Come on!
Lovely city, Port Said. Despite the trouble we had getting here.
Yes.
Though I must confess I don't feel one bit closer to that stamp.
That's why I want to visit our friend, Dimitro Touros. He's the only lead we have.
Yes, well... According to the address on his card, this should be his home.
Yeah. You go on and contact your agents in town. See if they've learned anything. I'll talk to Touros here and we'll meet at the El Akbar Hotel tonight.
Right.
Welcome to Port Said.
Well, I'll be...
And surprised to see me, eh, Mr. Rick?
I should have known you were aboard that train last night. What did you do? See Touros leave that compartment and follow him here?
That's right. Only stood to reason you'd be showing up here, too. So when the tourist character left the house, I got in.
Yeah. How long have you been here?
Only a couple of minutes, Mr. Rex.
Nobody else in the house?
No, not a soul. Well, what do we do now?
Look for a Heaton stamp.
The one worth £100,000. Sterling?
Yeah. Now, that looks like a den or library over there. Let's try it.
Hey, it's blacker in here than my Aunt Zenobia's heart.
There's a lamp on this desk.
Yeah. Hey. Ah, some joint, eh, Mr. X? Must be plenty of dough in this damn business. And look at that painting of that cute cookie dancing.
We're interested in stamps, not dancing girls. Remember?
Oh, sure. So, where do we start, Mr. X?
I suppose we try those albums on this desk.
Hey, look at those books. All covered with leather and stuff. Artificial diamonds and stuff.
Oh, those diamonds are real, Peg, huh?
Oh, sure. I knew it all the time. Would they ever put diamonds on a book that was real?
That's right.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's grab those books and scram out of here.
Oh, shut up.
Find something, Strix?
Yeah. Take a look at this page.
What's that to look at? Just stamps.
Hypno stamps.
Hey, maybe one of them's that the one that Joker said you should meet him on the train so you could pay him off, and it's worth almost $500,000?
Yeah. Let's check them.
But how are you going to do that, Mr. X? What are you going to look for?
They're in little plastic envelopes. We can see both sides. Look for writing on the back.
Writing? Or what kind of writing?
Any kind of writing. It just... My eyes. I mean, it's a matter of... There you go.
Mr. X. I'm sleepy.
The lamp, the smoke is coming up from the lamp. Being drugged. Got to get out of here.
Oh, sure, Mr. X. Got to get...
Hey, get up. Get the lamp. Drugs coming from the lamp. I got to turn it out.
We'll return to the man called X in just a moment. Countries, like people, have their economic ups and downs. And, like people, the countries that cut to the roots of their problems with the greatest ease progress the farthest and the fastest. Our own country has become the envy of the world in this respect. And why? Because the better we produce, the better we live. Throughout our history, living conditions have been geared to productivity, improving with industry's vast strides, bringing shorter work hours, more leisure time, and greater well-being to us. And American production has taken place in a setting of liberty, the liberty to work where one desires, to profit from initiative and enterprise. The American way has brought more benefits to more people than any other system in the world. So that's what we mean when we say, the better we produce, the better we live.
The return of a man called X with Richard Burton. No, wait. Richard Harris. I blew the joke.
Ty Zentner. No, who's in
there? There you go. No, it's building up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Building up to a good story.
Yeah, interesting. The history he had on radio. Of course, he was known first as a stage actor, then onto the film. In 1936, he began lending talents to radio, appearing on Lux Radio Theater at least 19 appearances, Screen Guild Theater at least 16 appearances, three appearances on the Jell-O program, one as host, the Burns and Allen Show, two appearances, Bird's Eye Open House, which was Diana Shore, the Pepsi Show, Bob Hope, and Hollywood Star Time, taking over as host in 1946. He made radio history in 1940 as the narrator of The Lodger, the first audition show for Suspense. He actually made 20 appearances on Suspense, and at least, I think, two of them, and it's in our schedule down the line here. He did an amazing version of The Waxworks, And in that, he played all the parts with minimal sound effects and minimal music. Absolutely astounding what he did in that episode. I can't wait to pull that up and share that with everybody. So it just and then getting his own show in 44 with A Man Called X. It's odd because it described it as a it was espionage, but they called it somebody else called it a detective. And in a way, I guess he kind of was, but really it was about international intrigue and espionage. Again, much like what the Dangerous Assignment was program.
Yep, but I noticed I couldn't wait to get in a reference about the Ruskies in this tale.
Well, there were Russians back in 1952, I think.
There were.
Well,
yes.
What I'm saying is
maybe.
It was already getting competitive between our nation and theirs.
Right. They hadn't turned into the Baltic states yet.
Well, we were already in a Cold War with Russia.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah. Real,
that
it
happened,
was so cold.
That happened almost as soon as, you know, World War II ended, and we took half the German scientists and they took the other half. And
I understand it was so cold in Siberia they were wearing mittens.
Yeah, and other things too. And other things too, you know.
and fuzzy hats. Cool fuzzy hats.
Oh, and the correct date is 1952 on this?
Yeah.
There's my boinger and my slide whistle. I knew I had stuff somewhere. So
yes,
I had to go running through the crypt. Sorry.
Originally February 19th, 1952, episode number 72.
Yes. Yeah, I got caught without my notes, and I was like, I don't know.
So...
Let's make up a date.
So you threw in a date before it was on the air. I love that one. Yeah.
1938, of course. Yeah. Well, that's cigar away, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. I love 38. It's a great year for stamps.
True. You know, it's one of the few things I did not collect when I was young. Like, I collected coins. And, of course, sports and non-sports cards, comic books, magazines.
And the heads of your victims. Don't forget that.
some.
Anyway.
Well, my dad was a coin and a stamp collector. He tried to get me interested in stamp collecting. And I got it and I put the stamp on my book and I said, okay, what next? It really didn't do anything for me.
I think for me it was overwhelming because, like, it's far easier to categorize U.S. currency. When you get into stamps, there's just so many permutations of this and that and so many additions. It was, like, too overwhelming for me to enjoy. You know what I mean?
I had a relative
yeah.
that was really into stamps, and they tried to get me involved, and I got mailed to Bombay. Okay, sorry. Hello.
That explains a few things. But
Is there someone in Parma that likes stamps?
I knew a doctor from Bombay. I knew a doctor from Bombay.
Yeah, but he ended up on Bewitched, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, what about the guy from Parma? I knew
from
that
where?
Guy liked stamps.
From where?
Parma?
All right, I'm going to get accused of stealing that from Swede. Let me get rid of, which I am.
Hey, you know what? Fogg says that he did stamps for a bit. And also, postcards. He had a neat postcard of a CBS television station, which was originally one of the, what? I believe, Fogg, you said it was one of the earliest experimental television stations in the country. Was that correct?
Oh, I remember seeing that post. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
believe it or not, Dale, you might know about this. Marvel comic books and DC comics also
yes.
Had stamp collections for their young collectors.
Well, what they did, which was kind of both brilliant and stupid at the same time, is they had these stamps in the comic book that were part of the page. So, like, people were
yeah.
cutting them out and collecting them.
cutting them out.
And unfortunately, like
comics.
A lot of the original edition of Wolverine, which became quite collectible, was in that mm-hmm. in those years. So it's extremely
right.
difficult to find one that's not been damaged because somebody wanted this the stamp. Collector's note to go right to that page. Is the stamp still in there? All right, I'll buy this thing.
I don't get this, but maybe. I have a collection of very old catalogs, like from Penny's and Sears and whatnot. Montgomery Ward's, Kresge, all the. I've got old 1960s, 70s, early 70s catalog. And someone cut out things. They didn't take the whole page. They would cut parts. I'm like, why are you cutting out a catalog? Hey, Mom, I want this. I'm too lazy to pick up the whole catalog. Here's this little snippet. Beats me.
Just so you don't see things they don't want to buy you.
What? Okay.
Edit. It's called editing.
Is that editing? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. I got some catalogs. It's like, in pristine condition, I open it. It's like, who cut the stuff out of this? But
maybe that was
getting for the toy.
Take it to the
that.
Store and look at it and go, "Yep, this is what I want." I don't know.
I don't know. It wasn't part of my growing up cutting out catalogs. Get
no,
smacked
me neither.
In the head.
You circled the hell out of stuff, but you didn't cut out. The
you
pages.
Might, but even then, you might get smacked in the head. It depended on who.
Oh, yeah.
Was in control of the catalog because some adult is going to come by and go, "Hey, kid," and smack you in the head. And then send
with
you
the
off
catalog.
To Bombay, and you won't know what's going on. So.
You can get you can get a dent in your skull from a Sears catalog, man.
And the old telephones.
Well not anymore.
Explain my behavior.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I know they got rid of it.
Yeah.
It's like what the heck? I worked at JCPenney's, one of my 968 jobs as an adult. I worked at a Penny, and we had the catalogs. It was great.
That's what kills me.
I used to throw
like them original...
right in the back of the head. And,
that's
and
what
people
kills
would be
me
cussed,
is how does the
I
original,
like, I don't know what happened.
The original top like catalog company in the world not get down with the internet and just own it? You know, they should have been Amazon. They should have been Amazon.
I'm kind of thinking perhaps, well, it's like Borders Books and More, which is long gone. They didn't see the use for the internet. They were a bookstore.
Yep.
So they let this group called Amazon start to handle the bookend. And they died out because they didn't get on with the internet. Now, what I find interesting is whenever we play a Sears Radio Theater, they have all these great Sears ads. And actually, things are pretty you're talking about adding a muffler onto your car for like 1997 installed. Maybe in 79, that didn't even seem expensive then. I think what happened is they started believing some of the press about them, and they raised their prices on so much that they technically weren't they wanted to be a cut above, I guess, Kmart. We know how that ended up. But it's, they were the original internet company. Because they were catalog. You got the catalog. You saw what we want, even including houses, house kits.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And so you can get anything in the Sears catalog, Sears wish book, and have it sent to you through the mail. I feel sorry for that mailman. But anyway, delivered. Yeah, here's
your house,
sir. Oh, wait. This is the wrong model. You got to return it and get me the right model house. Oh, my goodness.
I had a friend of mine who would get go back to school clothes. They would get this big, huge box. It was like 2.5-3 feet tall by 2.5-3 feet wide. Big, huge box of all brand new. Here's your wardrobe for a year. And they would get it from like Sears or something. And I was like, oh man, that is crazy. We never did that, but I knew a friend of mine, and one day he got this big box. I was like, what is that? All my clothes.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah. I miss Sears.
Yeah,
anyway.
Exactly. Fogg's Bane, what he said. They were called anchor stores. Actually, they are. And
yeah,
right. Penny Sears, even a Kmart. I think Kmarts were always separate, but I could be wrong.
Kmart's were separate. Yeah, I never saw them attached separate. To malls historically.
I have a there's a mall here that's not far away, and there was a Kmart.
I've seen them in shopping strips, but not in an
yes.
indoor mall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Not an indoor. No. But we have an outdoor mall.
The way it says is part of the anchored the mall because Sears themselves owned the land. You were in a mall. Sears and Penny's and your major department stores actually owned the land that was there
yeah.
that they built
yeah.
on. The rest of the mall was owned by
the
rest of the mall was owned by conglomerates, but you know the Sears store was owned by Sears and the land, as well as the Penny's and Macy's and O'Neill's and whoever you had as an anchor tenant. They actually owned that property as well.
It's so amazing that these companies that have done so long, so good for so long, are failing, and they're just about gone.
It's a whole new world. But let's go back to the old world of old-time
radio to the old
and
world
wrap up A Man Called X. Hey,
woo-hoo.
Penny, stamp.
And now, Act Two of The Man Called X, starring Herbert Marshall, with Leon Belasco as Pagan Zellschmidt. It is only a little colored piece of paper, a halfpenny stamp, but on its back it contains information that could quench the rising flames of unrest in the Middle East, or could lead to World War III. And now Ken Thurston is in Port Said, Egypt, searching for the stamp in the home of Dimitro Touros, a search that is suddenly terminated when he and Pagan come under the influence of some strange drug.
So, Thurston Effendi, you are regaining consciousness at last.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, looks as though... Who are you?
I am known as Erdry. Does the name mean anything to you?
That picture on the wall in Touros' library. The dancing girl.
Oh, I am flattered that you recognize me, Effendi.
Pagan, where's Pagan?
Your companion is sleeping comfortably in the cabin next to this one.
So we're aboard ship.
The Abdullah Bey, anchored in the harbor of Port Said. It is my husband's yacht.
Husband?
You have already met him.
Dimitro Touros.
That is quite correct.
Why bring me here?
Is it so difficult to fathom, Effendi? We are all after the same thing, the halfpenny stamp.
No, it still doesn't make sense. Unless you working with your husband, Audrey, or against him?
Dimitro is a pig. Does that answer you?
It gives me a general idea, yes.
Well, then let me give you more specific ones. On the Port Said waterfront, there is a cafe known as the Star of Heaven. Tonight, in the Star of Heaven, you may be able to find the halfpenny stamp that you seek.
That's interesting. Anything else?
I understand it will be in the custody of one I have heard referred to only as the man with the third green eye.
Well, not very enlightening, is it?
It will have to do. I have told you all that I know.
Yes, but why?
I wish that stamp to be in the hands of its rightful owners, not in the Metro's. And I intend to make certain of that personally.
Oh, how?
If you succeed in obtaining the stamp, you will come back here to the yacht with it.
Why should I come back?
There are two men wanted for a murder committed aboard the Cairo Port Said Express. A certain Major Osman Kemal is in Port Said at this very moment. He might well be interested in the whereabouts of one of those men.
Mm-hmm. Not very subtle about your threat, are you?
There is nothing very subtle about war, Thurston Effendi. Well?
I'll try to be back tonight.
These characters would cut your throat for nothing, even less maybe. Why don't we give this place a couple of quick powders?
No, not until we find the things we're looking for.
What things?
A halfpenny stamp. A man with a third green eye.
I don't know what kind of talk is that.
Pardon, Effendi, your order. For you, Effendi, best coffee. black thick and hot.
Thank you.
And for you, Effendi, Halib milk, pure and sweet from the cow.
Milk? But I ordered a triple scotch.
I changed the order. What do we owe you, waiter?
Nothing, Effendi. It has been paid for.
How do you like that? First freeloading I get in 6 months and I wind up with milk.
Mighty nice, waiter. Who arranged it?
The proprietor, Abdul Hafiz Ben.
Hafiz Ben?
Yeah, that is he, standing near the rear door.
Hey, Mr. Thurston, that Hafiz Ben joker, he's...
Yeah,
the...
yeah. Thank him for us, waiter. And here for you.
Oh, a thousand thanks, Effendi. May the blessing of Allah...
But, Mr. X, look at that Hafiz Ben guy. And what's all the turban he's wearing?
I see it, Pagan. A brilliant green emerald.
Sure, and it's sitting almost in the middle of his forehead. A guy with a couple of drinks or two under his belt could even think maybe it was...
A third green eye, Mr. Zelschmidt?
That's right, a third green... Hmm?
That a guess, Taurus? Or do you know?
I know. I can assure you that Abdul Hafiz Ben is the man with the third green eye.
And the man who has the stamp?
Quite nice of you to invite me so cordially to join your table, gentlemen.
The gun you've got inside that napkin says we haven't much choice.
Quite right, Mr. Thurston. Though it is only .22 caliber, it would be quite deadly if aimed properly. Well, sir, shall we indulge in some friendly conversation regarding a halfpenny stamp? You must realize by now that I want it, sir. Want it very badly. And before this evening is out, I shall possess it.
Then why waste time with me?
My dear sir, it is hardly a waste of time to remove the last obstacle from one's path. You will notice that the band is playing louder. The music will shortly reach a pitch where the sound of two shots muffled in this napkin will go entirely unnoticed.
Just like that, eh?
Just like that, sir.
Well, at least it's time for me to finish this coffee.
My face! My face!
Let's have that gun, Taurus.
I will kill you, Thurston!
Let's have it, Taurus.
I will...
Oh, Mr. Thurston!
Come on, that rear door.
Yeah, but where are we going?
We've got a date, Pagan. The man with the third green eye.
To hang around these joints, Mr. X. The rest of those jokers will be after us any minute.
Hafiz Ben's still got that halfpenny stamp.
And you think he's back here somewhere?
He's got to have an office someplace. Maybe this is it.
Oh, Mr. X.
Yes.
Oh, but who? Why?
Take a look at his turban.
Mr. X, the emerald... The third green eye.
Yes. Missing.
So the man with the third green eye is dead, Thurston Effendi. And the halfpenny stamp is missing once again.
Looks like it, Audrey.
Ah, this is too bad. But at least there is one consolation. The maître did not get his filthy hands on it.
Yeah. Well, I've kept my promise. Might as well be going. Well, Major.
And you remember me, Thurston Effendi?
Sure. Looks like you pulled a neat double cross, Audrey.
Perhaps it would not have been necessary if you had returned with the halfpenny stump, Thurston Effendi.
So you're in on this, too. What about that military police gag?
Merely a subterfuge to question you and Commander James Stevens at leisure. Circumstances prevented that aboard the train. Nothing shall prevent it now.
What do you think you'll find out from me?
The present whereabouts of the stamp.
You think I'm the one who killed Hafiz Ben and took the stamp from him?
No other explanation will fit the circumstances.
Major Kamal, start questioning him. He will tell us where it is hidden quickly enough.
Oh, you don't have to bother. I'll tell you where it is. But I want to get something straight first.
Huh? What?
As I see it, Hafiz Ben spread the word that he'd sell the stamp to the highest bidder, and the vultures started gathering around. Tourists who had the money to buy it, and the two of you who sent me to the cafe to get it for you.
So?
But you didn't figure that one of you would double-cross the other.
What do you mean?
While Tourists and I kept each other busy, one of you killed Hafiz Ben and took the stamp. Didn't you, Audrey?
What? You're lying.
Better not wear such spicy perfume. The scent was still in Harvest Ben's office. Now, where's the emerald? The one that's got the stamp concealed inside. In your purse?
No. No, no, stay away from there. No.
Okay, Major. It's your move.
So, you did double-cross me, Audrey. I should have known.
Norseman, put away that gun. You can't shoot me. You can't.
I am going to...
Is everything okay, Ken?
It's under control, Jim. Thanks. You heard everything?
I didn't miss a word. All very exciting at the end there, and I must say we've run up against as unsavory a character of crew of characters it's ever been my misfortune to meet.
Who are you to talk, you filthy capitalistic pigs? Someday we will prove to the world who the truly superior peoples are.
Oh, sure.
You're certainly trying hard enough. Using the double cross, murder, even war. Or maybe someday you'll learn that there are no superior people. Only a couple of billion human beings who want to live together in peace. Who pray they won't have to fight to get it.
Now, here's our star, Mr. Herbert Marshall.
Thanks for being with us. And my thanks to Lucille Meredith, John Dana, Ed Begley, John Stevenson, and Lou Krugman. Next week, South America, the basin of the Orinoco River, where, believe it or not, a ton of dynamite and one Pagon Zellschmidt produce an explosion that threatens the whole country. Pagon? Leon Belasco, of course. So join us, won't you, when next I return as the man called X. Good night.
Called X, starring Herbert Marshall, is a J. Richard Kennedy production with music by Milton Charles. Tonight's story was written by Sidney Marshall. This program is directed by Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents on this program are fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, until next week, same time and station, this is Hal Gibney saying good night for The Man Called X. This is NBC, the national...
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
In a land of venomous vipers, there's no time to count the fangs.
That's very soothing to me for some weird reason. I don't understand.
We come in peace. You know, interesting there in the closing credits, I didn't catch that until just now. Jack Johnstone was the director of this series. We will know him better from being the guy that took over as director and producer of Johnny Dollar in 55 and brought in Bob Bailey to take over the role of Johnny Dollar, which really, really put Johnny Dollar was just a tough, another tough private investigator type kid until Bob Bailey got in there in the role. So
Dave, did he mention Richard Denning? Maybe I missed it. Maybe I got confused.
I didn't hear that. I mean, it may have been, but the Jack Johnstone.
He said
threw
thanks
me through
to somebody. Over. I thought it was Richard Denning. I could be wrong.
I think so, because Richard Denning was actually listening to that episode live along with Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, there you go. There we go.
That's the
that wraps
yeah.
it up. It almost makes me want to slide out of here. Yeah, okay.
Oh, there you go.
Gar's trying to build up to that Theater 5 episode. It shows you what a budget you have for sound effects when you have to use a slide whistle.
I know.
Yeah.
When that's your music bed, you might need to hire a musician. I don't know.
That's all right. We work with what we got on the budget we got.
Budget.
Yeah, it's always in the red. Our budget is always in the red.
Yeah, as it should. As it should, if you think about it. We should probably run over to Nightbeat next and kind of build the tempo here for Theater 5. Build the
I'll tell you what, I absolutely love Nightbeat. Frank Lovejoy is one of my favorite actors, mostly in radio, but he did a few movies and did a little bit of television. The Nightbeat program was so stinking well written and acted. Even though you hear so many of the regular CBS people on there, you hear the William Conrads, the Howard McNear, so many of the regular people made it, but the scripts were so well. Frank Lovejoy was so absolutely great at being this cynical, but yet in a way hopeful newspaper reporter. And when I looked at the old time radio downloads, they called it a tough and streetwise Chicago Star reporter, but they kind of, again, they referred to him almost as a detective. And in a sense he got a slow lead on something and went through the whole story to unfold the whole story. And the endings weren't always happy, you know, or sometimes the happiness was there was a conclusion before somebody died, you know, that came to kind of a, I don't know, it was so well written and so well acted that it's right up there as one of my top shows.
Well, in the end, everyone got ice cream, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Well,
even the dead guy.
Yeah,
even the dead guy.
Even the dead guy.
Well,
fact,
I think sometimes
Go ahead. Okay.
I was just going to say I think that Frank Lovejoy sometimes ate the dead guy's ice cream for him.
Well, see that's Erie House Radio's number two favorite ice cream flavor is dead guy ice cream.
Yes.
The crunchy
one. I guess
you can
call that Italian.
Yeah, it is crunchy. Yeah. Could even be flaky. It could be flaky and crunchy. It's still ice cream. Yeah. And it could be hairy. You might get, you know, you don't know what you're going to get in that spoon, you know, so.
Like a box of chocolates. You.
Dave, is there the fantastic amounts of Wurlitzer and or Hammond organ in Nightbeat as much as it was in The Man of X?
No. They had orchestration. I think some of it was pre-done, and some of the sound effects were pre-done, but it was done so well you didn't realize it wasn't a Foley guy doing it. They just worked out so well. You know.
Yes.
I'm reading. Good old Bob said he watched a YouTube video of folks riding around with Ernest Borgnine in his RV, and they would stop and buy ice cream for everyone. What a nice guy, I tell you.
Yep.
Wow, and you know, and you thought that getting coffee with actors was all made up by Jerry Seinfeld. No, the guy that deserves the credit is Ernest Borgnine.
That's right. His amazing radio career is just unparalleled.
Wow. CW brought up Moose Tracks. They actually make a low sugar Moose Tracks for people like me.
They do.
Wow. And it's delicious, I might add.
And you're welcome, CW. She wanted ice cream now.
Yep.
Wow. I think that's an aberration of nature. If we're all going to die, enjoy your sugared ice cream. Have fun. You know, live hard.
Well, yeah, I just don't want it to be tomorrow.
Well, me neither.
You might want me to, but I don't.
Wow, no. Not unless you owe me money and there's a way to collect.
Yeah.
That's not happening. That's
then we get back
happening.
To the Italian ices. We got a lot of radio. This one is called
Harlan
Matthews Stamp Collector.
Yes. May 29th, 1950. I did it right there.
Wheaties presents Nightbeat.
Episode number 19.
Wait. On stage tonight from Hollywood, Nightbeat, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations. Nightbeat. Nightbeat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. Stories begin in many different ways. This one began and ended with a confession. A confession to the crime of murder.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
I have a little boy 3 years old, and he eats Wheaties without any sugar or cream on them, just plain, like peanuts. Now, this isn't necessary for you, of course. You can put sugar and milk and fruit on your Wheaties if you want to, but they are good enough to eat plain. They're crisp, they have a nut-like taste, they're all by themselves for flavor, and they give you all their whole wheat goodness in every crispy bite. So if you choose to sit on the back steps eating Wheaties out of the box, it's your very own business. We won't complain. You'll still get that whole wheat and all the nourishment in it. Eat Wheaties any way you like it, but eat them often. So good. Wheaties. Breakfast of champions, that is.
You can't keep a finger on a city's pulse without having some of its sweat and tears rub off on you. But sometimes the difference between turning a corner or going straight ahead, opening a door or passing it by, is all that separates safety from danger, horror from happiness, or life from death. Tonight the difference lay in whether I should or should not get a shave before starting on my nightly tour of duty. I decided on the shave. Usually I go to a barber shop on the fifth floor of the Conway building in the heart of the Loop. By the time I got there, however, it was after six and the elevator operators had all gone. Two of the lifts were still operating on a self-service basis, so I got in one and pushed the button for the fifth floor. The elevator was almost to the fourth floor level when a sudden yelling drew my attention to the little window in the elevator door. I pressed the emergency stop. A tall, thin-faced man had been lunging at someone out of vision. If there was ever murder on a man's face, it was on his.
I saw you talking to the FBI. You told them.
I brought the elevator down to the floor level without stopping to think what I might be getting myself into. When the doors opened, I saw them rolling around the corridor ahead in a desperate struggle. The tall man was on top, his left hand flailing at the other's face with a briefcase, while with his right he was trying to drive a long, thin blade into the other's chest.
Help! Don't! Holland, please!
Hey, drop that knife! The human beanpole saw me coming and scrambled to his feet.
So he told you to, huh? He told you!
Look, pal.
I'll kill him.
Take it easy.
Take your hands off me. I'll kill you!
He slashed at my face. As I threw up my arm, the point of his blade snagged in my sleeve and jerked out of his hands. He darted for the elevator, and I ran after him in the best tradition of Frank Merriwell saving the game for dear old Yale. My form may have been All-American, but my flying tackle was all wet. His heel caught me in the head, and I fell on my face, lost in the storm.
Are you hurt?
Oh, no, no, I'm just stupid. Every time I try to borrow trouble, I always find my credit's
clear. Yeah, let me help you up. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, thank you. I'm all right. How about you?
No, he didn't hurt me.
Well, he was sure trying. He a friend of yours?
Will you come into my office and let me dress that bruise on your cheek? I'm Dr. Reichel.
Well, I'm Randy Stone. You better give the police a ring right away. That fellow's a maniac. Who is he, anyway?
Oh, he's one of my patients. That's my office over there.
Oh, one moment. Let's not forget our evidence. This knife he dropped.
Well, it isn't a knife. It's a letter opener. He took it off my desk.
A letter opener?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's different. What was he trying to do, open you with it?
Well, now, please, come in. I'll put something on that bruise and try to explain.
Thank you.
Let's see, a little methyl. It should pick that up.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how deeply I appreciate what you did.
Oh, it was nothing. He was only trying to kill you.
Will you hold still a moment? There. You see, the man is my patient, a disordered personality.
Are you an alienist, Doctor?
Yes, my field is psychiatry.
Well, from what I saw, your patient is more than a disordered personality. He's a homicidal maniac.
And I'm Mr. Stone.
Well, aren't you going to call the police? Or do I have to?
Oh, please. No, what happened was just an accident.
An accident? This hole in my sleeve wasn't made by Moss, Doctor. He tried to knife me, too, remember?
Well, only because he identified you with me. Now, it's not too unusual in a case of this sort for a patient to transfer his persecution complexes against the doctor who is treating him.
Oh, yes, but...
But what happened tonight is entirely my fault. I was so encouraged over certain other developments that I overlooked the extent of his immediate hysteria.
So, what happens if he comes back and kills you? Do you get a medal?
No, he won't try. Not again, I can assure you. But all I ask is that you don't report this incident. To have him arrested would destroy my chances of curing the poor fellow. Now, you won't, will you?
Well, okay, Doc. You probably know what you're doing, I hope. Who is he, anyway? What's his name?
Ah, no, Mr. Stone. Please, I'm sorry.
Okay, Doc. They say a guy is only as big as the things that annoy him. And he's kind of tough when the annoyance is 6'4" and has a knife that makes him even bigger. Well, it just goes to show you. A few seconds earlier, a few seconds later, I'd have gone right up and had a shave from a barber. As it was, I arrived just in time for a close shave at the hands of fate. She was at my elbow again, I guess, when I took the elevator back down into the lobby. Only this time, fate was in the flesh, and a lot of it.
Oh, excuse me. Hey, you dropped this yet?
What?
This briefcase. I was cleaning him back when I see you come in. When I come out, this briefcase is lying by the elevator. I just finished cleaning, so I know it's not here before. It's yours.
Harlan Matthews.
Huh?
I'm just looking at the name stamped on the leather. No, it isn't mine, but I know whose it is. It's one of Dr. Reichel's patients upstairs. I'll be glad to go up again and bring it to him.
Oh, thank you. I'm late finishing here already.
Harlan Matthews. I'd heard the doctor call him Harlan. It was the same man and the same briefcase he'd been using to bash Dr. Reichel over the head. As the elevator doors opened on the fourth floor, the doors of another elevator slammed shut and started down. I found Dr. Reichel's office locked and the light out. Obviously, he'd just left. I went down to the street level again, but the city had swallowed him up. I looked inside the briefcase. It contained a heavy album of foreign stamps belonging to Harlan Matthews. A phone book in the corner drugstore showed two numbers for Matthews, his home and his business. I tried his home.
Hello?
I'd like to speak to Harlan Matthews.
Oh, he's not in. Is there any message?
Is this Mrs. Matthews?
Yes.
Your husband left a briefcase in the Conway building.
The Conway building? Have you seen him there? This isn't Dr. Reichel, is it?
No, Mrs. Matthews. My name is Stone. However, I did see your husband at Dr. Reichel's office just a little while ago.
Well, I just phoned there.
Well, you must have just missed him.
Well, where is Harlan now? He's coming home, isn't he?
Have you tried his office?
There's no answer. Isn't he coming home?
Well, that I don't know. Dr. Reichel may be able to tell you.
Oh, I've been trying to get him at his home for the last 2 hours. He never keeps his office open this late. I just called him on the bare chance that he might be there.
Mrs. Matthews, why does your husband hate Dr. Reichel?
Oh, well, Harlan is sick. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Well, then, what does he imagine?
I don't know. He won't tell me. It's since the war. It's something to do with the war, something that happened. I don't know what it is. He's sick.
Yes, of course, Mrs. Matthews. Well, I'll drive over with the briefcase. I just called to be sure that somebody'd be home. The Matthews lived in a small apartment on the north side. I barely touched the doorbell before I heard her footsteps almost running to open it.
Oh.
She was a faded little woman just this side of middle age. Behind her in a crib, a baby was crying. Mrs. Matthews, I'm Randy Stone.
Mr. Stone, I need help.
What's wrong, the baby?
No, it's Harlan. He just phoned. He's at his office. The way he talks, I think he's going to kill himself. Please, you're a friend of his, aren't you? You've just got to stop him.
All right, where's your telephone?
Why?
Well, the police can get to him a lot quicker than we can.
No. No, he warned me that if I sent Dr. Reichel to the police, he'd kill them and himself.
Well, okay, then, let's go.
Oh, my baby.
If we're not too late already.
Oh, I can't. My baby is so sick, I just can't leave her. I can't.
All right, Mrs. Matthews, it's all right. You stick here. I'll handle it. Harlan Matthews' business address was a third-floor shop in a third-class shopping district. The dry goods store on the street level was still open for business. Its long awning still hung over the sidewalk in memory of the recent May Day sunshine.
The windows above it were all dark, except one on the third floor. The lettering on it read, H. Matthews Stamps Bought and Sold. I climbed two flights to the third floor landing. The doors of the stamp emporium were half open. Inside, Harlan Matthews was seated at a desk, his thin, bloodless face seeming to stare straight at me. But the light was in his eyes, and I knew he couldn't see too much. Not until I got inside, anyway. Hello, Mr. Matthews.
Yes, what is it?
I found a briefcase with your name on it.
Huh? Well, where is it?
Your wife has it. I gave it to her.
You came here just to tell me that?
Well, not entirely.
Oh, I see. She sent you here.
Well, look, Mr. Matthews, you have a... Keep your hands on the desk. Don't do it. Drop it. Drop that gun.
Let go! Let go, you fool! I'm using the gun on myself!
You're not using it on anybody. Drop it! Drop it! I'll take that. Sorry I had to hurt you, Matthews, but you're a lot better off alive than dead, believe me.
Why? So you can arrest me?
Arrest you? What makes you think I'm a cop?
Don't think I'm so blind that I didn't recognize you when you came in here. You try to jump me at Reichel's office tonight. Waiting out in the car, you think I didn't know what was going on? That Reichel had ratted on me.
You've got the doc all wrong.
Oh, I have, have I? As if I couldn't see through this stupid act of yours. You and Dr. Reichel trying to help me too, aren't you? All I have to do is talk, don't I? Just relax and talk. Well, what would you like to hear?
Look, friend, you don't have to tell me a thing.
Yes, why repeat what you know already? Dr. Reichel's already told you everything I ever confided in him. What do you want, a written confession that I shot Captain Claney in the back? Well, I did. Write it down. I'll sign it. Is that what you want?
If you don't mind,
details?
I...
You like details?
Look,
May 6, 1943, 2 days before we took Tunis, out in patrol. Write it down. I hated him. He was a lousy dog, arrogant, insulting. All right, there it is. Motive, time, place, everything. You satisfied?
No, I'm just tired. If you feel like talking, talk to the police, not me. I never saw either you or Dr. Reichel before tonight. My name is Stone. I'm with the Star. If you doubt it, pick up the phone and find out.
The papers? Reichel told the papers?
Well, you get this into your head and you'll have it in a nutshell. Reichel never told anybody. All I know is what you've just spouted.
Me?
You sit here like a broken-down ham, dramatizing yourself, dreaming up things that never happened, making like a martyr, feeling sorry for yourself, leaving your wife at home worried sick about you. You got a family to think of.
Well,
now, go on and get your coat. I'm taking you home.
I guess maybe you're right. I've been acting like a fool, haven't I? I'm sorry.
You'll feel lots better in the morning, Mr. Matthews. Now, come on, let's go.
Yeah, I'll put things away first. May I have my gun?
You better let me keep it for a while.
Oh, you don't have to worry, Mr. Stone. Not anymore. This note on the table, I was writing it to my wife when you arrived, telling her goodbye. Well, I've changed my mind about dying.
Well, we all have our bad days. Shall we go?
Yeah. My gun, please. Oh, it's all right, really.
Well, okay. Here, I've taken out the cartridges. Souvenirs, you know.
Thank you. I'll put away these catalogs. Would you mind closing that window for me?
I walked over to the big window facing the street. It was wide open from the bottom. I reached up to close it just as a soft footstep sounded close behind me. And Matthews pushed me over the sill toward the street below.
General Mills is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
You know, this talk about Breakfast of Champions is the real thing. Jackie Robinson does eat Wheaties. So does Tommy Henrik. So does Mel Parnell. So does Bob Feller. And so does a gentleman named of Mr. V.O. Hill, 1445 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. Now, Mr. Hill is not a nationally famous figure, but he is a champion just the same. On January 7th of this year, he was playing golf at the Rock Creek course. At the 11th hole, Mr. Hill made a 148-yard drive against a pretty stiff wind and made a hole-in-one. You think he wasn't a champion for a while there? Brother. And I'm standing here telling you Mr. Hill eats Wheaties. He does. Says he eats them regularly. They're whole wheat, you know. There's a lot of energy in whole wheat. It's the kind of energy you need, whether you're dealing with a baseball bat or a golf club or a vacuum cleaner. Get your Wheaties come breakfast time and see if you don't have a better morning. Wheaties, milk, fruit. Breakfast of champions. It's for you, too.
Get some Wheaties, put them in a bag, and tie it to your face.
You know what? I was... Okay. When I mentioned the great writing in this. The lying, every time I try to borrow trouble, I find my credit is always good.
Yeah,
I just love things like that. I absolutely love lines like that. And you find that throughout this series and throughout these shows. It just, it's great writing. And the way he delivered it, you almost didn't catch it. It was done so well.
Yes, it was.
Did you notice that in eating, that Wheaties is good for you even if you use a vacuum cleaner? It actually said that in there. I don't know why. Good writing.
Trying to picture how to use a vacuum cleaner with Wheaties, and it's, yeah, it's creepy.
No, it was an allusion to give the fairer sex,
if you can use a vacuum cleaner, Wheaties is still good for you.
Wheaties is your friend.
What I always think of with Wheaties is that Johnny Bench commercial where they showed him having errors and things like that, and they're singing the song, "Hey, John, you didn't have your Wheaties, too bad, it's been an awful day." That's the one Wheaties commercial I remember more than any other Wheaties commercial.
That's good. There were a lot of good ones over the years, and gosh, that product's been around forever. No wonder it's still on these old-time radio shows. Time is wasting away, so we're going to jump right back into the conclusion of Nightbeat. Harlan Matthews, Stamp Collector.
And now back to Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
Life, they say, is a continual process of getting used to things we hadn't expected. Like, for instance, getting pushed out of a guy's office window. I hadn't figured Harlan Matthews was that far off the beam, but that, of course, was my fault. From a character as neurotic as Matthews, I should have expected anything. I guess I was out more than a couple of minutes, because when I came to, a cop had evidently just arrived on the scene. Voices crowded through my head against a backdrop of pain. I stared up at the moon shining brightly through a huge rip in the awning, and I tried to push myself up to a sitting position. The cop bent over.
Easy now, easy. I'll call an ambulance.
Wait a minute. Get Matthews.
Who?
Harlan Matthews, stamp dealer, third floor. He pushed me.
Matthews, huh? Just wait here.
I took inventory of my legs and arms and found them in usable condition. I climbed to my feet. People crowded around, their voices blending in an unintelligible jumble of questions. I staggered through them toward the cab. Their faces swarmed about me, white and staring, like faces in a nightmare. I reached out, found the door handle of my car. I opened it and got in. I sat there for a while, trying to reassemble my wits. My head throbbed with pain and my mouth was dry. I wanted a cold drink more than anything I could think of. So I found my keys and drove to the first drugstore I came to. It was the sight of the phone that made me remember Mrs. Matthews. She'd be anxious to know what happened. I had to tell her something. I rang her number.
Hello?
Mrs. Matthews, it's Randy Stone.
What happened?
No, I got there in time.
Oh, thank God. Where is he?
Well, I thought he'd be home by now. Not long ago.
Well, when you left him, was he all right?
Oh, yeah, he was just swell. You ought to see me.
What?
I'll tell you what. I'll call Dr. Reichel right now and tell him the situation.
I got a call from Dr. Reichel just a little while ago.
Yeah?
That is, it came through a message service. They want Harlan to call Dr. Reichel right away. I called the doctor's office to find out why, but the doctor's not there. He's not at home either.
Well, why does Reichel want to see him? Didn't they tell you?
No. The message just said that it was very important.
I invested another nickel in the call to Dr. Reichel's office. There was no answer, so I sat down at the counter and had a cup of coffee. I felt somewhat better by now, although my head still throbbed and I still found it hard to unscramble my thoughts. I went back to the phone booth and called Dr. Reichel's home. Perhaps he'd returned by now.
Oh, what is it, please? Dr. Reichel, resident?
Has Dr. Reichel come in yet? Has there been anybody at the house to see him within the last hour or so?
No visitor. Too late. You call tomorrow, maybe. Yes? Goodbye.
I checked with Mrs. Matthews once again to see if Matthews had returned yet. He was still missing. However, since my last call, the police have dropped in. They wanted to talk to him about pushing someone out of a window. Someone who'd driven away from the scene without leaving his name, address, or license number.
You were with him, Mr. Stone. He couldn't have done it.
Oh, yes. Utterly fantastic. You'd better try to get some sleep, Mrs. Matthews. I'll ring you if I locate him. Good night. I headed out toward Dr. Reichel's residence on the northwest side, wondering just how foolish I was not to send the police out instead. Matthews did more than just pass from mania to depression. He'd made the round trip. The doc had been looking for him, but now he could be looking for the doc. I stepped on the gas. It was quite a drive to Dr. Reichel's home. When I got there, it turned out to be a sizable estate with an impressive driveway turning through the moonlit grounds. The dark hulk of a battered sedan stood parked near the head of the walk that led to the veranda steps. I pulled up behind it. I got out, and I gave it the once-over. I touched the top of the radiator. It was still warm. A parade of maples lined the paved walk. Ahead, the house stood dark and still. I lifted my hand to the doorbell.
Don't.
Well, hello, Matthews. Kind of thought you might be around.
What are you doing here, Mr. Stone?
When I hit the pavement, I kept bouncing until I finally landed out here.
I hardly expected to find you quite the same as when I left you.
Oh, I'm not. I'm smarter. Next time I get that gun you're holding, I'll know enough not to give it back to you.
Next time? There isn't going to be a next time, Mr. Stone. Not for you, or for your confederate, the doctor.
Oh, yeah, of course, you could be faking. I took the cartridges out of that thing once.
Yeah, so you did. I might have forgotten to reload it. Why don't you try to take it away from me and find out? Well, come on. Is it loaded or isn't it? Make me show you.
Well, if I did, it might arouse the neighborhood, don't you think? You might not be able to hang around here waiting for Dr. Reichel.
Yes, Mr. Stone, I've already thought of that, or you'd have been dead by now. Unless, of course, the gun isn't loaded. I'm willing to let you force me to show you. All you have to do is take one step toward me. Just one step, Mr. Stone. One single step, and you'll know the answer.
Before I do, maybe you could give me some other answers. Answers to a few things I still don't understand.
Indeed? What, for instance?
Well, for one thing, I still don't understand just what good it'll do you to kill either Dr. Reichel or me.
You know the answer to that, you and him both.
I wish I did.
He said he was my friend. It would help me if I talked, so I told him. Then I saw him talking to the FBI man at the federal building, and I knew I'd made a mistake, that he betrayed me.
If he had, would you be free now? Figure it out.
I have. They're just waiting to round up some witnesses who saw me shoot Captain Claney.
You're wrong, Matthews. You're dead wrong. Reichel hasn't told anyone at all, and he never will. Same goes for me.
I only wish to heaven that were true, because if it were, I'd never have a better reason for killing you than now, before you do have a chance to talk. But unfortunately, I'll never be sure that you haven't talked.
Well, kill me, there's one thing you can be sure of. Star billing in an execution party.
Really? But right now, it's you who are the star, Mr. Stone. Or maybe this gun isn't really loaded after all. Come on, find out. Give me an excuse for pulling the trigger. There he comes. Back. Against the wall. Stay where you are. Right there.
A cold wind rustled the maples as the big car came to a halt at the head of the drive. Hidden by the trees, its lights blinked out. By the veranda rail, a dozen feet away, Matthews crouched, gun raised. The trees hid whoever it was coming up the walk as the moonlight and shadow danced among the leaves.
Come on, Michael, come on. Keep coming. Come on.
Matthews.
A little closer. A little closer.
In another moment or two, his target would be out of the shadow of the trees into the bright moonlight. Matthews.
Huh?
Those men with him.
Oh,
hiding among the trees. See? They're moving.
Where?
There. Huh? That shadow there and over there and over there. Can't you see them?
Yes. Yeah.
They're covering him. He knows you're here.
I'll kill him.
They'll get you first. You haven't a chance.
No.
Drop that gun. Drop it.
They'll never get me. Never.
He thrust the gun to his own head and pulled the trigger 6 times before I ever got to it.
They'll never get me, nobody!
But, Mr. Stone, You mean he was trying to ambush me with an empty gun?
Yes, Doctor. Then he tried to blow out his brains with it.
Oh, poor fellow.
Looks to me like he's gone off his trolley, but for good. Look at him lying there, groveling in the dirt, as though he were trying to hide.
Or dig himself in. Yes, he's living a moment of the war all over again. Harlan, stop it. Stop it.
Genusia, May 6, 1943.
Well, how did you know?
He told me. I guess Captain Claney got his revenge after all.
What do you mean?
Well, he shot Claney in the back and thought he got away with it, but look at him now.
Oh, Mr. Stone. This whole nightmare in the poor fellow's mind started when he observed me making an inquiry at Army Information Headquarters here. I was trying to locate the one man who could cure him.
Who?
Why, Captain Willard. Claney, of course.
What's that?
But the reason I arrived here so late is that I've been wandering about looking for Matthews. I wanted to tell him that I finally succeeded. I've found Claney.
You mean that...
The man's alive and well, working in a bank in Spokane. I spoke to him tonight on long distance.
Well, that's one for the book. Matthews must have just wounded him and then thought that he...
Matthews didn't even hit him.
He didn't hit him?
Doctor.
Wait a minute. Harlan. Yes? I think he's in there. Harlan.
Yes?
Do you hear me?
Doctor. Dr. Reichel.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes?
Captain Claney is alive.
What?
You didn't kill him. Do you understand? Yes. You did not kill him.
You're lying.
No, I can prove it to you. Now, we can call him up. You can speak to him yourself. He's alive.
No, I shot him. I shot him.
You thought you shot him, Harlan, but you missed. You missed.
No, I saw him drop. I saw him, and he dropped.
Oh, yes. Claney dropped all right, but not from your bullet. No. When I spoke to him on the phone tonight, he said that the only wound he received was a shell splinter in the chest. Why, he doesn't even remember a sergeant named Harlan Matthews.
What? You're joking.
No, Harlan, it's the truth.
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him.
Know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, huh, Doc?
Well, for him, there's still a long, hard road ahead and plenty of work to do. But at least, Mr. Stone, we've reached the beginning.
Well, dawn is just around the corner, and the city lights are going out street by street, like the lights in some people's minds. Yes, they say the truth is a great mental healer. And I guess it is, if you can bear to face it. Okay, so let's face it. Copy, boy.
You are listening to Nightbeat on the Wheaties Big Parade.
Whole wheat. Flakes of golden whole wheat. Sounds pretty good just like that, doesn't it? Everybody knows you need whole wheat, and Wheaties make a very nice way to get it. Breakfast time, lunch time, any time's the time for Wheaties. Easy, too. Just open the package, pour those flaky little flakes into a bowl, sugar them, cream them, and be happy. That's Wheaties you're eating. Breakfast of champions. Wheaties. Get some.
Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Irwin Ashkenazy with music by Frank Wirth. The part of Harlan Matthews was played by Jeff Corey. Jeanette Nolan was Mrs. Matthews and the doctor, Ben Wright. Listen next week at the same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness.
And this is your Wheaties man, Frank Martin, inviting you to listen also on Tuesday, that's tomorrow night, to the premiere of The Penny Singleton Show on the Wheaties Big Parade. See you then.
Going to make a pie sometime soon? Make it with Crust Quick, the Betty Crocker pie crust mix. You know, it's a tender, flaky crust that's at the bottom of every delicious pie, sure as you use Crust Quick. And so easy.
Just add water to Crust Quick.
Mmm, and what pie crust? Tender crust, tasty crust, rich, short, lovely crust, just like Betty Crocker makes. And you can make it.
Just add water to Crust Quick.
Crust Quick, the Betty Crocker pie crust mix. Nightbeat came to you from Hollywood. Stay tuned for Christopher London over most NBC stations.
And there you go, Night Beat. And Dave, it's easy to see how he's one of your favorites. He Frank Lovejoy seems like he was born to play that role.
And he did one version on television of it. I don't know whether it was just because people wanted to see it or he wanted to do it or whether it was kind of a pilot for TV. I would have watched, I would have dug out those series on TV to find it. It was just, but I did watch the one he did, and I liked it. It's kind of like his Meet McGraw, but it was exactly like a Night Beat, the way he narrated it and everything. I loved it.
Awesome.
And the thing about this, go ahead.
Yep, Beery House Radio proudly presents another Gar's Moral of the Story.
You can't get pushed out of a window if you're not there in the first place.
It starts in 2 minutes.
2 minutes? I'm not starting over again.
That would have been the better soundbite after the moral. But alas, I was unprepared.
One quick thing I was going to mention about the Night Beat. NBC, I think, really wanted this show to succeed. It only lasted for two seasons, but they transcribed it, and they would air it sometimes two times a week during different slots just to try and get an audience for it. That's how much they really wanted that show to work, and it was just done so well. I don't blame them.
I say it was Paola.
Could be.
Could be.
Could be. And we still have time for yet a third show.
That we do. And I think, Gar, you've been waiting for this one from Theater 5.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. next week, Theater 5 is going to have an entire show all about Joy Buzzers.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah.
That's it, Dave. Now there's your challenge. Joy Buzzer Weekend. No.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Or Joy Buzzer / Whoopee Cushion. We can do that.
Yeah.
There we go. Boy, sit down. 28
minutes of nothing but that.
Could make music that way. Who knows?
You could. I actually did show a video last week about if you put a long tube and varying sizes of tubes onto a whoopee cushion, you can make music.
Oh, wow. Kind of like running your finger around those glasses, only with a whoopee cushion. Ew. Oh.
Probably sounds about like those kind of bagpipes.
No.
Yeah.
Paper
yeah.
Lovely picture there. Nah, we don't want to go there.
Yeah, you
but,
did. dig your way out of that one, Dale. Go ahead.
You know, Theater 5, out of that dark place, huh? Theater 5.
Yeah.
a little more modern than we are used to, yes?
Yeah, mid-1960s, and it was Theater 5 for a couple reasons. One, they liked it to air at 5 p.m., and two, they were on 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, mm-hmm. with a variety of episodes, from anything from drama to comedy to science fiction to whatever else there could be. But this is kind of a combination of several, right, Gar?
Well, tell me this, Dave. Do you remember the name of the musical director for each and every Theater 5 episode?
I do not. Can you inform me?
Eric Blugong Snanko or something like that.
Gesundheit, yes.
I don't know what it is. They have a great name for that guy, and he's just this great Uvangs Gisgrumbagid Blank Sanko or something.
Belelikov has a weird name, and he was pretty.
No, you'll hear it at the end. At the end, listen to the credits on the musical guy, because it's great.
You got me intrigued now because I love movie music, and a lot of those guys cut their teeth or at least got extra work doing radio. So this will be interesting.
Well, I had mentioned Cy Zentner, and it went flat line, but okay.
Yeah, I'm not picking up on that. Wonderful
Sizender?
The Wonderful Stamps of El Dorado, Theater 5. This one is from
April 21st, 1965.
Theater 5 presents The Wonderful Stamps from El Dorado. Mr. Murchison.
Yes, sir?
I want the truth from you, the whole truth. And I intend to get it.
My dear sir, I'm always truthful. I'm a teacher of mathematics, and mathematics is the most truthful of all sciences.
Maybe so. But even if figures don't lie, liars can figure, so don't try it on me.
Well, I have no intention of trying anything on you, sir. You shall have the truth.
You mean you're ready to make a statement about the disappearance of your friend Harry Fentress?
Yes, I'm ready to tell you everything I know about Harry.
Johnson, get this down. Every word of it.
I'm taking it down, sir.
All right, Murchison, you can start. Now, for the record, let me state that we know that last week a friend of yours, Harry Fentress, came here from Boston to visit you. Several days ago he vanished. Disappeared, simply evaporated from this fancy penthouse of yours 40 floors up. No one has seen a sign of him since. Now, what I want to know is, what happened to Harry Fentress?
All right, I'll tell you the exact truth. You won't believe me, but I'll tell you anyway. To make you understand what happened to Harry Fentress, I have to go back a good many years, 20 years, actually, to a certain New Year's Eve when my Uncle John, a daring Wall Street plunger and a great world traveler, asked me to call on him right here in this very apartment.
Nils, my boy, tomorrow begins a new year. I predict it'll be no better than the old one. The world is going to the dogs.
I believe people have been saying that for 3,000 years, sir, but somehow we still seem to get along.
Well, it may be, but you'll have to get along without me. I've had enough, and I'm bowing out.
Uncle, I hope you don't mean that
I simply mean that I plan to retire and enjoy myself. I shall loaf for a few hundred years, shoot big game, flirt with pretty girls.
Excuse me, sir. Did you say a few hundred years?
I'm a busy man. I cannot repeat myself. Let us say that I intend to seek a change of scene. But before I go, I want to do what I can for you.
Thank you, sir. That's very generous.
Unfortunately, I am dead broke.
Well, that's very depressing to hear, Uncle. I was hoping for, well, at least a million so I could give up teaching.
Now, cheer up, boy. You'll always have a roof over your head anyway. I own this penthouse apartment. I've paid up the carrying charges for 20 years in advance. You can live here without worrying for 20 years, anyway.
Well, that's something, sir. I could never afford anything like this on my teacher's salary.
Aside from the furniture, the only thing I have to leave you is my stamp collection. And here it is. You'll find some of the stamps not only very rare, but rather unusual.
Thank you, Uncle.
And now you must excuse me. I have some farewell letters to write.
Will I see you again?
That depends entirely on you. And now, goodbye. Or perhaps I should say, au revoir.
Next day, my uncle vanished from this very apartment, completely disappeared. So I moved in. I was very disappointed when I tried to sell his stamp collection. The dealer said the stamps not only weren't rare, but one set, loose in the back, had to be forgeries because they were issued by some foreign country that called itself the Federated States of El Dorado, and he'd never heard of the place. He offered so little that I kept the stamps as a memento of my uncle, and so I went on teaching. Well, now, gentlemen, we skip 20 years. We come to the events of last week.
Yes, and it's about time, Murchison. I'm being very patient with you. Get to Harry Fentress.
I'm about to do so, sir. Harry is an old friend from Boston with whom I played chess by mail.
One night last week, I mailed him a move in our latest game. Harry is a stamp collector, so in a spirit of fun, I took one of those mysterious forgeries, those stamps from the Federated States of El Dorado, out of my uncle's album and pasted it on the back of the letter. It was a 10-cent denomination, and it said, Rapid Post. Well, no sooner had I put the stamp on my letter than, to my amazement, the letter rose in the air. For a moment, it floated over my desk. And then it shot toward the open window and out at terrific speed. By the time I got to the window, it was gone.
Murchison, I don't know what this nonsense is about, but you...
Please, let me finish. As I stood at the window, the phone rang. It was Harry Fentress calling from Boston. That envelope with the El Dorado stamp had just floated in his window and landed on his desk. It was the first case in the world of a real airmail letter, one which went directly by air from the sender to the receiver. And Harry said he was coming the very next morning to discuss the whole strange affair with me.
Nils, I tell you, it's the stamp. That Federated States of El Dorado stamp. It carried the letter directly to me at a speed of thousands of miles a minute.
It's too bad Washington can't issue stamps like that. We might get our mail on time.
Nils, this is a big thing. Now, we have to investigate it. Have you any more of those stamps?
A dozen or more. Look, right here in the album. The dealer said they were forgeries.
Forgeries? They're the rarest stamps in the world. I wonder where your uncle got them.
Oh? What is it?
Your uncle used to be a great traveler. Now, even before the days of airplanes, he'd be in India one day, in Mexico the next, in Africa the day after. Isn't that right?
Well, yes, it's true. I never thought of that, but what are you getting at?
This is how he did it. He used these El Dorado stamps to mail himself from place to place. There's no other answer.
By George, you're right. He must have mailed himself around the world.
And he told you some of those stamps were rare and unusual. Unusual, that's hardly the word for it.
Well, I should say not. But Harry, how can we test them out?
Well, we'll try them on ourselves. Now, where would you like to go for a vacation? Right now, today.
Well, let me think. Yeah, Paris. The Left Bank. A little cafe, I remember. The Silver Pheasant.
No sooner said than done. Get me two tags. We're mailing ourselves to the Silver Pheasant Cafe in Paris.
Now, listen to me, Murchison. If you think I'm going
please,
to sit here...
Please, sir, please. You asked for the truth. You might at least listen to me. I know it may sound unbelievable to you, but we did. We addressed two tags to the Silver Pheasant Cafe. Put on those wonderful stamps from El Dorado and... We were there. One minute we were in this apartment, in this very room. The next, we were standing in the Silver Pheasant Cafe in Paris with the noise and sounds of Paris all around us.
Nils, we're here in Paris.
It worked, Harry. The El Dorado stamps brought us here just as you said they would. Well, let's get a table. Garçon.
Here comes someone. He's not a waiter.
Yes, sir?
Garçon. I beg your pardon.
Yes, sir. I am the police.
Yes, I see you are.
You are foreigners. May I see your passports?
He looks awful grim to me.
Our passports?
Your passports, cards of identity. You must explain yourself. En vitesse, if you please.
Harry, what'll I do? We don't have any passports. He'd put us in jail. The French are so suspicious these days. And you know French jail.
Monsieur, I insist. Your passport at once.
Get him talking. I'll write out two more tags and addresses back home.
Well, we got out of that by mailing ourselves back here.
You mailed yourselves back here. To Paris and back again by airmail. I don't know why I'm listening to you.
Because every word I'm speaking is the truth. We got back here safely, but the experience was a little shattering.
Nils, I'm bitterly disappointed. I was all set for a Paris holiday.
Yeah, so was I. If only we hadn't run into that French policeman.
Well, we're not going to give up. Now, you do have a passport, don't you?
Yeah, in the desk.
Well, get it. I have one in my bag. We'll carry them this time. There are lots of stamps left. Let's take a world tour. Where shall we go first?
Well, I have Uncle John's notebook here. He's noted down places he particularly enjoyed. He says, let's see, that Cairo is one of the world's most fascinating cities.
Well, then let's go. Next stop, Cairo.
Next stop, Tripoli. No, Cairo.
Anywhere you have a stamp for.
Sizenderland.
But don't forget to take your slide whistle.
I won't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always keep one handy.
Yes. Next week on Theater 5, by Magic Carpet Ride.
More cowbell.
More cowbell.
More cowbell.
More magic carpet.
And more Theater 5 coming up in just a
okay.
minute.
Okay, there we go.
This is a cool episode.
Good.
Yeah,
Dale,
go ahead. I'm sorry. You go.
Dale, I tossed out some info about Cy on the live chat in the room, if you look at that.
I'm looking.
Down at the bottom.
It's about Simon Hugh Zettner.
Yes. He did a whole bunch of... I've got a bunch of his stuff. Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. Okay. Check it out. There you go. And everyone else. It's lots of fun.
Do it now. We'll wait.
Yeah, well. No, that's the great stuff about old-time radio and... The old big band, it's great stuff to discover. It's sitting right there, and we just don't know.
Yep.
Yep.
Let us wrap up our final feature, Theater 5 with the wonderful stamps of El Dorado. They're magical.
Now you listen to me, Murchison. I want to know what happened to Harry Fentress.
I'm trying to tell you.
As the district attorney, I advise you to come clean. We'll try to give you a break.
I said I'm trying to help you, sir.
You're trying to confuse us because you're an accessory. Maybe the murderer.
That's a reckless charge, sir. But in order to understand, you have to know the entire story. As I was saying, we mailed ourselves to Cairo in care of the American Embassy there. They're not attacking us, Harry. It's a demonstration against our embassy.
Yeah, well, that rock just missed me. Ow! That stone hit me.
All right, we better get inside. Try the door. It's locked. We're locked out. Let us in. We are Americans. Help!
No, it's no use. All right, I'm going to mail us back to the apartment. If we stay here, we may be killed.
All right, but hurry. We just got out of there in time. The mob was surging forward when Harry got the tags stamped, and here we were back in the apartment. Harry, my nerves are badly shattered.
Yeah, well, that was very unfortunate. And that mob must have been mad at the United States for something.
So many people are these days. We try so hard.
Well, that takes care of Cairo. Yeah, but I hate to give up. I think we ought to try again.
Well, it seems a shame not to use these stamps now that we have them. Listen. Listen to this from my uncle's notebook. The village of Rembuk in Africa is located amidst the most beautiful jungle scenery in the world. The foliage is lush and the trees drip orchids.
Oh, that sounds more like it. Some quiet, peaceful scenery is what we need at this point.
I'll get the tags ready. What'd you say the name of that place was?
Rembuk, Africa.
Then let's go!
So there we were,
in a lovely clearing in the African jungle, with a waterfall nearby and the trees alive with orchids. And...
Nails! Someone's shooting at us! The natives! They're trying to kill us!
Shoot back! Get down! Over here!
Come on, Nails!
Over this tree!
I'm with you.
I was close.
Walk out! Come on the left side of their line.
Where's the road?
Come in! Stop from there in the middle.
Yeah.
Now, you two blasted fools, tell me what you're doing here. Trying to get yourselves killed.
We're just looking for some nice, quiet scenery.
In the middle of a native rebellion. Don't you know those Simbas will flay you alive if they catch you?
Yeah. Our information about this place seems to be dated.
Get set, men! They're going to charge!
Nils, here's your tag. Let's get out of here.
And I suppose you're going to tell me you found yourself right back here in this apartment.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Badly shaken, but determined not to give up. We tried two or three other spots my uncle mentioned in his notebook. The story was always the same. Riots, rebellions, civil war. No matter where we went, we couldn't get away from it. Finally, we tried a remote Pacific island that my uncle's notebook called the... Unspoiled Pearl of the Pacific. On the beach, we found a huge sign. Danger. Atomic testing area. Well, sir, we got away from there fast. Back here in the apartment, we talked things over.
Nils, I guess we're beaten. There's no place in the world that's quiet and peaceful anymore.
20 years ago, my Uncle John said the world was going to the dogs. It looks as if he was right.
Disappeared mysteriously, didn't he? Right out of this penthouse.
Where do you suppose he went?
Well, I wish I knew.
He was a smart old bird. He's probably found some perfect hideaway with...
That's it. What is?
That's where he went. The place we haven't tried. El Dorado itself.
El Dorado? But...
But it's the only possible answer. Now, he said he was going to loaf, shoot big game, and... flirt with pretty girls. Did you notice some beautiful girls and the gorgeous scenery and the strange animals on the stamps? Oh, this El Dorado must be a wonderful place.
Well, Harry, we don't even know where it is.
Well, what of it? We've tried all the places we know, and what have we found? Riots, turmoil, fighting, and trouble. And what's more, things aren't going to get any better.
Well, that's how Uncle John talked.
And he was right. And I've made up my mind. I'm going to join him.
But suppose you can't get back.
Well, if the place is as beautiful as those stamps make it seem, who wants to get back? Yeah, give me a pen and that tag. I think you should come, too.
I'd like to think it over, Harry.
Suit yourself. I'll address myself in care of your uncle. Care of Mr. John Murchison, Federated States of El Dorado... Perishable, handle with care. That ought to do it. Now, give me a stamp.
There are only two left.
Well, give me the green one.
Yeah, that's it.
I can just imagine that place, El Dorado. Oh, by the night, your uncle and I'll be drinking palm wine under a golden moon. Are you coming?
Well, if I only knew where El Dorado is... No, I think I'll wait, Harry.
If you change your mind, there's one stamp left. Well... I'm putting mine on. There. Goodbye, Nils. Goodbye.
Harry was gone. He shot out of the window and vanished into the sky at incredible speed. And I just lost my nerve. I couldn't bring myself to go off into the unknown that way. But, Mr. District Attorney, that is what happened to Harry Fentress. He mailed himself to El Dorado.
Mr. Murchison, I've heard some wild stories in my time, but this one tops them all. Harry Fentress is dead, isn't he?
I don't know. I'd give $1,000 to know. But I believe he's alive, and right this minute is the happiest man on earth. That is, if he is on earth.
Get that, Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Now, come off it, Murchison. You quarreled with him, you killed him,
Somehow you hit his body and... What do you got there?
It's the last El Dorado stamp I have left.
Hmm. Very pretty. An attractive native girl. Federated States of El Dorado, Rapid Post.
Maybe now you'll believe me.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it, Johnson?
The phone in the next room, sir. It's for you, your office.
All right, I'll come take it. You stand outside the door until I'm finished. As for you, Murchison, don't try to get away. I'm not through with you.
Get away? Where could I go? In fact, where on earth would I want to go the way things are? Unless... Harry, I wonder if you had the right idea. By George, I will. I'll do it. I'll join you and Uncle John. Where's a tag and that last stamp?
All right, Murchison, now we're going to stop all this nonsense and... Murchison? Where are you? Johnson, he's gone.
Well, he certainly isn't in the room, sir.
I told you to stand outside the door. If you let him get away...
But I didn't, sir. He didn't come through the door. I didn't take my eye off it for a second. Maybe the window.
Oh, don't be silly. It's 40 floors to the ground, but he's not here, and... There's a stamp on this table. It's gone, too.
Seems to be.
There must be some clue, something... Wait a minute. What's that?
Oh, it's a blotter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's see. Hold it up in front of that mirror. That's it. And now I can read it. Care of Mr. Harry Fentress, Federated States of El Dorado, perishable, handle with... So that's it. El Dorado.
El Dorado? Well, that's a kind of an imaginary place, isn't it, sir? Like a paradise that nobody could ever find?
Yeah, that's what I always thought, too. Come on. We're going to search every inch of this room.
For Mr. Murchison, sir?
No. To see if I can find another one of those wonderful stamps.
Has presented The Wonderful Stamps from El Dorado, written by Robert Arthur, directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Court Benson, Guy Sorrell, Stan Watt, Robert Dryden, and Jim Campbell. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastutsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. Has been an ABC Radio Network production.
You betcha. Give me the mongos.
Yeah, I can picture Ricky Ricardo going at it.
Blazdas Stanko. What was his name?
Bob.
Bob. We'll call him Bob. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. His friends.
My name is Bob. How may I be helping you?
Yeah.
That's right.
The musical guy they mentioned at the end.
Yeah.
Blazdas Stanko or something.
Yeah, Gesundheit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you name your kid Bob, it's easy for them to spell their name. It's same forward and backward.
I think if it's possible, we need to learn a moral from this story here.
There is.
If it's possible.
Sure.
Again.
Again!
Again!
Erie House Radio proudly presents a final Gar's Moral of the Story.
I don't know where it is. My boinger. I have no idea.
He left it in your other pants.
There. All right. Here we go. If you don't know where you're going, how do you know when you get there? That's the moral, dear.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to tie this boinger around my neck. Is this a work?
One fun thing if you don't know.
I have some bad news for you guys.
Uh-oh.
I could not build a weekend around whoopee cushions. However, I can build a weekend around practical jokers. How's that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, we can work whoopee cushions get there in there somewhere.
I know. There has to be.
It's a must.
That would be really bad. You know, some like really arcane, like Dick Tracy episode where the villain just constantly foils Dick Tracy with whoopee cushions. I think that would... Tonto won't stop pranking the Lone Ranger. You know, something really good. Yes, Kimo Sabe, yes, be bad. You know.
Told you not to eat those burritos. Yes.
That's right. No more beans for you, Kimo Sabe.
Hey, before we go off the air tonight, I think that, Dale, we lost another horror host this last week.
Mm. From Australia, yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Nigel Honeybone from the Schlocky Horror Picture Show over there.
Oh, no, that's terrible.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few of his shows. He was so good. Oh, man.
And that's one of the crazy things about the horror hosting is even though we're centric to us, it's beyond the borders. There are no borders for the horror hosting. And I would love to run across more that are out there. I would argue
that America fostered it, but yeah, no, you're right. It holds no country.
I would say not. I would like to see a Russian horror host.
This movie is crap.
I think half their movies are horror movies, so you know it wouldn't take much to get a horror host.
But yeah. Dale, he couldn't say that. He said, "This movie is crap." However, we are sponsored by the state, so I can say nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I'm not saying it was good, but.
What happened to Dark Janusz? He's off. He's a
who?
He's no longer on programming. He's still up here.
Yes. Yeah.
He'll be broadcasting from Siberia.
Something about relocating to Siberia.
Yes. You can't put Laugh Track on state-sponsored horror movies. It is against the law.
That's right. До свидания, buddy. До свидания. Yeah.
Nice try, Schlickoff. Better luck
there
the next
go.
Time.
Schlock off. Oh, God. That's a great name.
I ran across that too, Fogsbane.
Just a few moments here, Gar. That's okay. Tomorrow night, more stamping. For lady.
Oh, my God.
Stamp for Death from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. That's at 6:30, and right after, then it's...
I am so lost. Okay, it is Horrible Horror starring Guard of the Ghoul, and we're doing something tomorrow at 8. Blah, blah. YouTube. No. What's it called?
Twitch.
Twitch. Yeah, there we go. Sorry. Lost my brain. Left it in the other room. My notes are in the other room. I just walked in here because of the boinger. I got the boinger.
There you go.
I got nothing else. Blah, blah. Careful, Icarus.
I want to thank Fogsbane, CW, good old Bob and Rob Smith Jr. for dropping in live in the chat. My buddy Chris, who I know is listening out there.
Hi, Chris.
And hopefully you'll get signed in with us and join in on the fun. We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern.
Right, time. Yes.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
He's twins.
Don't come alone.
He's twins with himself. There you go.
Okay.
See you next time, folks. Ta-ta. Timing is everything. Okay.
Bye.
Well, timing would be everything if we could have a correct timer, yes.
Yeah, well.
If our Boinger worked, no.
I think it has something to do with the streaming.
Streaming?
I don't know.
The lag thing?
Yes.
Yep. Well, while we were on the air, Gar was busy, and I got something. Talk about stamps. I ran out of stamps, and I had to get new stamps. And they have forever stamps, but they're Halloween-themed. And you guys are both going to be receiving something in the mail.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And it's cool. It's got a silhouette of a cat on it. The forever stamp.
Meow.
Well, you guys are cat guys. You guys have cats.
Yes, we have cats. Yes.
Yeah. So
it's like fleas, but we have,
Well, hopefully you don't have fleas and you have cats, because if you have cats and fleas, yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah, no.
So I was busy during the program. I was multitasking.
Yes.
And put together a few things for you guys, and you'll be getting those soon.
I like surprises. Well, almost always like surprises.
Yeah,
right?
Surprises. Not
yeah, you
so got to
be. Yeah. Well, the ones for me so far have been very pleasant.
Oh, yes.
And will
continue
to be. So.
Good.
no robots this time, but. Can't get robots every time. Sorry.
Yeah, that could be financially
expensive.
Devastating. Yes.
Well, that's why we budget, right? Okay, that's what that looks like. La dee 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 dee.
Turkey.
No, it's jerky.
Jerky. Oh. Oh, okay.
This is something that the ghoul would play in the background, like.
Oh, is the bed?
Yes.
I like
cool.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need the bed.
I just love instrumentals from that era. 50s, 60s.
Two-wit, I push you again towards Cy Zentner, who was the epitome of instrumentals.
Who's the bongos, man?
I don't have any bongos on this one.
Hey!
I don't know if I have any bongos. Do I got bongos?
Oh, that's a travesty.
Uploaded right now, I mean.
Oh.
I mean, there's always Wipeout, if you like bongos.
I love Wipeout. In fact, there's a really long one, and it's by, I can't think of the name. I mean, so many people have covered Wipeout, but
Isn't that where Pop Out Moo Mau Mau originated?
No, that was from Sesame.
No, that's Surfin' Bird. By the
Bird,
trash.
Bird is the word.
No, Surfin' Bird. Bird is another song by the same people, but
it has a bird in it. They were
bird
themed.
The bird is the word. No, Surfin' Bird is mostly instrumental, and I think that's after a big drum solo, that's when they break out with Pop Out Oom Mau Mau. And then later, a group called the Rivingtons did a song that was more lyrical called Pop Out Oom Mau Mau. And an obverse song that was Mama Oom Mau Mau. Yeah.
I will have to agree.
Novelty songs are fun. I so miss getting in the car going for a ride, because that was the only way I could get that particular AM station that was playing Dr. D when I was maybe in my late teens, you know, just learning how to drive. That would be my excuse to go for a late drive. Going to listen to Dr. D.
Yeah, crazy thing. I never heard of Dr. D until the internet.
Oh, man, you missed out. That was fun.
I did.
Although it's fun on the internet, too, because he's just a fun guy.
That was a whole youngster period of time where I was missing out.
I think maybe you were a bit young, and I don't know. Because it was maybe around the late 70s when I started, like, not hearing him on the radio as much anymore.
Mm.
And maybe
early
80s.
Which is weird because there were so many fans by then, you would think you'd hear more of him.
Well, and he started cranking out albums. Oh, my gosh. I had this huge five-box set of his five-album set, and somebody poured a whole pitcher of beer into it. The records didn't get damaged, but all the paper and cardboard was
covers,
pretty much shot. Yeah.
I have a question. I saw him interviewed on David Letterman, and David Letterman apparently did not know who this guy was, which is very weird.
Yeah.
Sometimes Dave got a guest, and he was a great guest, but Dave had no clue. And I was like, the heck?
Right.
Unfortunately. Anyway, during the interview, Dr. Demento was on there, and it looked like he had an injury to one of his arms. Do you know anything about that?
I do not.
I don't either, no.
It looked like he was having a problem using one of his arms. I don't know if he
I've seen him on some of the Weird Al videos and stuff, and I didn't see any problem with him using his arms on those. He had a lot of pictures where he's raising both of his arms and stuff also, so I don't know that.
And it may have been only for a short time, maybe an injury.
Yeah, it might have healed. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Now Dave will remember local celebrity, Uncle Vic.
Uncle Vic, yeah. Yep.
He had a pretty good relationship with Dr. Demento. Anytime that Vic came up with a new song, he could be sure that Dr. D would play it at least once on his show. Going back to when Uncle Vic wrote that song, Space Invaders, I don't know if you remember that one, Gar, from the 70s.
Somewhere in my collection I have a Dr. Demento's Best Of. I don't know if that's on there or not.
Check it out. It could be on a best of. It's Space Invaders.
I know Fish Heads is on there, and I know there's something. There's some other ones that are on there.
Billy Mummy.
Billy Mummy. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Billy Mummy was in the band that did Fish Heads.
Oh, okay.
He was in Barnes and Barnes.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the number one fish. Okay, there you go.
Isn't that amazing? They had a lot of
I was always a
big
Bill Mummy fan because of this Lost in Space thing. I was like, oh, wow. And then he showed up on, like, The Outer Limits and or whatever. The thing about it's going to send people to cornfields or something. I forget what it was.
Yeah,
he was on, I think, two or three Twilight Zones, yeah.
Twilight Zones,
yeah,
there we go.
That one was really, really good, Gar, because that was like him grown up from the original Twilight Zone episode with a daughter that had that power, too.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. Okay.
Oh, that was a great homage to the original Twilight Zone story.
It was,
story.
Yeah.
It was really neat. Dave might have pointed that one out to me, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
I had seen it fairly recently, and maybe you were the one, Dave, because it was like, oh, my God, thank you for showing me this, because this is awesome.
Yeah, I did mention it, and I even shared that one with CW. Yeah, it just, it's really cool, and I guess hearing Billy Mummy talking about it, you know, he encouraged his buddy. His buddy was approached about making that Twilight Zone series, and the guy didn't know whether he should do it or not. He says, yeah, do it, because, you know, if you don't do it, somebody else will, and you can try to make it as much as you can. Now, a lot of those episodes weren't really very Twilight Zone-ish. There were a couple that were really good, but that one was great. And I guess he came up to Billy with that idea. And Billy said, well, let me see a script. And when he got the script, and he also had full script approval, he said, if you don't like it, I'll write the script. If you don't like it, it'll never get filmed. And when he saw that his daughter, his actual real-life daughter, was included in the script, he knew he was going to do it.
Yeah, that's even more heartwarming, knowing that was his actual real-life daughter playing that role. How did you guys like that in the Lost in Space movie, playing actually an adult Billy Mummy?
Right.
Or, you know, not an adult Billy Mummy. Adult Will Robinson.
Did he play a doctor? I thought he was a doctor.
Well,
And someone stole his badge.
In the Netflix remake or Prime, whatever it was that had that. Yeah, he was in the first episode. He was Dr. Smith, and they stole his badge. She stole his badge.
Yeah,
she kind of killed him.
Yeah. I was thinking of the 90s movie, Lost in Space, though. He played Will grown up.
Because
they had assembled anybody who was still alive, with the possible exception of Dr. Smith, had a cameo. June Lockhart had a cameo. She was still with us at
that
the time.
As the teacher, yeah.
Yep, yeah.
Did all kinds of weird stuff
with
her.
What's his name? The guy who played Don. He was the commander that sent out.
Mark Goddard.
Mark Goddard was in there. Angela Cartwright was like a reporter. Where did they stick Judy in? I don't remember. They stuck her in there somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know what? We were fortunate because at one of the Gilardi Fests, they brought in Krista and Mark mm-hmm. Goddard. They brought them in, and they were guests there at Gilardi Fest. And
that was an early Gilardi Fest, maybe I remember seeing it. Yeah,
I'm wondering if that was after they lost the right to use Gilardi. Remember the second or third one was called the Big Chuck and Little John Sci-Fi Fest. I think that's the one they were at.
Oh, gosh, County Fair, didn't they? Medina County Fair?
Yes. No, it was before the Medina County Fair one. This was still up at the Berea, I think. And unlike the Horror Hound and other places, again, they were paid to be there, so they did pictures and signed autographs for free, where, you know, all these other ones, at the Horror Hound this last time, they were asking, $85-$90 for a picture and an autograph from these actors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was crazy. You should have seen the one year I was there with, working on the Horror Host Hall of Fame and the inductions and stuff. And, you get to meet a few people. Very, very brief brush with Elvira, but, what the hell? Where was I going with this story now? Damn it.
The high cost of – I talked about the high cost of –
Oh, my God. Pam Grier was there, the action star. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You should have seen the line, and it was like $100. I'm like, oh, my God. They're shoveling the money at these people,
Who's Pam Grier?
She was in a lot of the exploitation movies of the 70s.
The black exploitation films, yeah.
Yeah. She was in a lot of them with Sid Haig, believe it or not.
She was
in a lot, she was Foxy Dynamite or something things.
Yeah.
Well known.
Sorry.
Exploitation was. Sid Haig was in a lot of those with her early in his career.
No, that's odd.
Yeah, Foxy Brown and Coffee and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she would be she was better than most at fight scenes and stuff, so she was a good actor. Action star, and that really got her work later in life and showing up at these trade shows.
Was she married to Rosie Grier, the big, huge guy?
No.
I don't believe so. No relation. Oh, my God, and you should have seen the line when they had the Walking Dead cast there, a bunch of cast members.
Man, you couldn't walk through that place.
It was insane money. It was $180 or something. To get your picture taken with three or four of these cast members. It was insanity. Someone I knew spent that kind of money, and I'm like, really, dude? You're going to pay that much for a picture? Wow.
Yeah.
I'd rather,
One really cool thing is, and this was decades later, was June Lockhart's daughter ended up on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, there you go. That's kind of interesting.
In fact, June Lockhart just recently had a birthday, within the last week or so. So did Elvira. Elvira just had a birthday.
Yeah, Elvira turned 70.
70.
Mm-hmm. And she's doing a Christmas or Halloween special.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, still.
For some kind of streaming channel or something, I think. I'm not sure. I wasn't really aware of the service, but yeah, at 70.
I saw something about that. Yeah, that's... Elvira's still trying to knock it out there.
I sent you guys a message about something. Like, really?
Yeah. Is it dirty?
No. No. From me? No. Sorry. Wrong guy. I'm not going to be sending it.
Just now you sent a message. I am not seeing
nothing. No, it's on the joint Facebook.
Yeah.
I think it's a joint Facebook thing.
About it adding, about additions and things? No.
You got me. Yeah. Oh, I'm at my craft table putting together postcards for stuff. Let me get over there. Mm. I just walked away from my boinger, so I hope I don't need it.
Yes.
and if I didn't say so, I absolutely enjoy getting the opportunity to talk with you guys on a Friday. It's always fun. Always.
Yes,
awesome.
It is.
It is.
More fun than humans should be allowed.
Maybe I put it on Dave. No, that's...
Or cats.
Maybe I sent it. Did I send it to Dave? Oh, there was something about Timex on the monsters.
Somebody.
Yeah,
Ernest Borgnine is a famous stamp collector.
Is he?
September
7th.
I see that on the list.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Is he?
Well... He is in heaven.
Okay, thank you. I feel better knowing that.
Yeah, I sent you guys a picture of Gar holding Witchy Poo, a picture of Witchy Poo, which passed away. Oh, the Norma Tanega, you're dead thing. I put that on there. I don't know if you guys listen to that.
Mm-mm.
I'm looking for the Elvira thing. No, I must have sent it directly to Dave then.
Could be. I'd not see thing. Of thing.
We lost you. There you are. Oh yeah. Oh, right when we're doing the show, I went to press the mute button. Crazy Gar, I pressed the off button on my phone, and that's when
nice.
I called. That's when I. Yeah, I was like, let me put this on mute. You know.
I thought, did I offend him?
No.
Did I forget to bathe? Did I?
Well, you might have done that. I don't know. It's frickin' radio. Now Dave says he got cut off.
God damn it.
Well.
Oh, well. It's getting around that time anywho.
Yeah.
But, what are you showing tomorrow night? Do you know yet?
Oh, my gosh. Dungeon of Harrow. Horrible.
Yes, Dungeon of Harrow.
Oh.
Harrow?
Oh, my. Oh. Oh, so bad.
Hello.
We goosed it up to make it better.
Ooh.
Goosed.
Ooh-hoo.
Yes, two
Ooh-hoo.
Fingers in the wrong places. We goosed it up to make
two
it.
Two fingers yet. Oh, you're horrible.
Hey, stop. So, so it's better, but it's still, I mean, you can only put so much lipstick on something, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, there's some funny things in there. Really, I wish that you had the ability to tune in. It's going to be this. I'm going to tell people, okay, now see, this thing is going to be a regular feature length, but it's going to seem longer, but it's not. But it's going to seem longer, but it's not. But it's going to seem long because it's so painful. And this is how I'm going to introduce it. And now for our feature presentation of the evening. Direct from San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, God.
No,
I can get in there. It's just I honestly.
You get bored? I could get bored. I can't sit there and stick through.
There's nothing boring about you. It's just I have a lot on my plate sometimes.
Yes.
Especially with puppies. Puppy is doing good, though.
Yeah, doggy. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's fun watching him grow. Except now he's grown over 50 pounds now. He was 17 pounds when we got him.
If I didn't have the damaged heart, not physically but emotionally, the damaged heart thing going on, I would rush out and get a new one right now. But I'm going to wait, there's a lot of things pushing me to get the heck out of where I'm at, to to get into a new crypt, or put the crypt I'm on on wheels and move it somewhere. I don't know. One of the two.
You know, it's sad, though, because the wife and I are looking at, like, I don't know how many more pets we can ever have. I mean, we're getting to be that age where we don't...
You got to tell the kids.
What a heartbreak it is saying goodbye, but you don't want to outlive them because you'll go to your grave worrying about them. You know?
So, I mean, you're going to have to say, okay, kids, here's the deal. We're getting a bearded lizard and, you know, it's going to be yours and, you know, or whatever you get.
No, I think we're pretty well set, though. We actually found a godparent for the parrot because we figure the parrot has the best chance of living, outliving all of us.
Yes, unfortunately. And I've had a good relationship with some birdies where, you know, they were like, I'd come into my parents' home and the birds were like, oh my gosh, it's him. And it was like crazy. And I was like, yeah, okay, hi, how are you? You know, and they want to be right on the shoulder, you know, and they want to sit there and whatever they do, you know. And it was cool bird, you know. We had several birds that were like that. And it was like, wow, okay. I never thought I would get that with a bird. Squirrels, foxes, possums, raccoons, you know, all kinds of things, sure. Never thought so with a bird, but it can happen.
Yeah. So. The dog's enamored of a baby raccoon that's been sneaking into the yard.
Yeah, I bet. But you don't want to get mama raccoon involved in any of that because that could be
doggy. I don't let him out until the raccoon leaves because the raccoon kind of looks and goes, oh, crap, they saw me. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And then the dog can go out. But
right.
I just don't want an altercation of any kind.
With
any kind of wild
raccoon,
animal, because you never know what that animal has, you know?
Yes. And even though the dog has the rabies shot, why have to go through that?
Well, there's other stuff, too, like distemper and God knows what all.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yes.
Yeah. No, it's pretty sane here.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, right. Now, puppy had a tantrum the other night. It was hilarious. He's on his thing where... Puppy had a tantrum. He had a tantrum.
Oh. He didn't get his way and he did some stuff?
Right. He decided last night that he wanted to go out and party.
Uh-huh.
You know, just go out in the yard and just hang out. No, not at midnight. No, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So both of us told him no.
In. Right, exactly. All right.
Both of us told him no. We went back to sleep. Uh-huh. Next thing I know, he's at the back door. Yip, 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 yip. And then I look. And he had... He has this thing for toilet paper. When he's bad, he grabs the toilet paper roll and he runs with it. I mean, he grabs the whole roll. It's not like he grabs one strand and then rolls it. He grabs the whole roll.
9,000 rolls of toilet paper. Okay.
When I got up in the morning, it looked like a crime scene. There was white shreds everywhere.
Oh.
And it was too funny to get too mad at him, but I was like, no, when we no.
Yes, and also you cannot correct an animal after the fact. Only while they're doing it, because they, just like Gar, I have no idea what I did. You know?
You could tell by their body. The funny thing is about a dog will tell on itself. If not, showing you, look
but
what
you
I
should
did,
never
it's
shame
more
a
like
dog,
their body
they'll
language
go crazy
gives
with
them
that.
Away. Their body language just gives them, where a cat, they'll lie their ass off. Oh, broken lamp.
Cat,
yeah, the dog did it. Dog did it. Dog
no,
did it.
The cat will talk you into the fact that you did it.
Yeah, or the dog did it or something.
No.
Just, it wasn't like,
me. I didn't do that. No, you did that.
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with that. That's all you, you know.
Yep.
No, I had a great opportunity with cats as well, and they're great.
Oh, God. Joe is giving me all the love he's got right now. Mm. He finally woke up. He slept through our whole show.
Is your kitty cat getting along with the dog at all yet? Has that happened?
Still terrified. Still won't go upstairs.
Yeah that's got to stop. They got to turn into buddies at some point in time.
Well, I've heard it can take up to 6 months, so he's halfway there.
Okay. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I'm down in the basement much more.
Mm-hmm.
So, like
but
I said,
doesn't the dog eventually want to go down into the basement?
Dog is not going down to the basement because a cat has nowhere to run, and it's rather unkempt down here, and he would create a very destructive ruckus. I have a lot of my collectibles down here. So, he's just not coming down here.
Mm-hmm.
But Denise has been trying to lure him back upstairs because he misses her. She doesn't come down as much. I have, you know, I do the litter, the feeding, the, and apparently all the loving lately. But
it's crazy the relationships that we have with our animals there.
Oh my God. It gets complex, you know. You bring in another animal, and it's like you're adding 17 new relationships because of all the other critters. Crazy.
Yep. That is unusual.
Funny thing, Joe used to do.
I really miss it because I got nothing.
Joe used to stand on his tippy toes and put his front paws up on the aquarium, and it looked like he was reaching up, worshiping. Oh, fish. And he would just stand there like that. It was hilarious. Just like, fish, I worship you.
I want to eat you in my worshiping stomach. Yeah.
I don't know if he'd eat them. I think he would just play with them. He's...
No, I think, yeah, too much movement for a cat not to say no.
Yeah.
I think the end point of that would be yummy. And it moved and wiggled so I could play with it.
For a while, we could amuse him by putting fish on the big screen TV. Like there's videos on YouTube of just fish swimming around. Uh-huh. Oh, and he would sit there at the TV and just, reach up and try to tap it.
Yeah.
Reach up and tap the screen. Hey, fish, big fish. Oh.
My stepmom, I had a dog. He was about an 80-pound mix between a chow and a, he was a chow and a Shar Pei. Big, but he was big. And I brought him over one day, and he kept having a problem because at my parents' home, they had 80 to 90 raccoons that would come up into the yard. And so he was, like, really having a problem with it. So my mom went over and talked to him. My mom was, like, the animal speaker, like the whisperer people. And she went over and she talked to the dog. And the next thing I know, the dog is just sitting by the door, which is one of these French window type doors. You can see through it. And the animals, the raccoons are right there. And he's just looking. He's not whining. He's not whimpering. He's just looking. And he looked for like 4 hours. And, you know, we're back in the den watching TV or something like that. And it's finally like, well, you know, it was time to go. And she was like, I got him to pay attention and look and watch. But I didn't give him a break word, so we didn't have anything to go, hey, come over here. He wouldn't do it. He was like, I'm fixed. I'm not moving. It was very funny.
Yeah.
No, you always have to give him a, what is it, a safe word? No, that's not it.
A safe word. What are you doing with your pets, dude? You got to have a safe word.
The word where you break them out of whatever they're doing, whatever that is.
Yeah, trigger word, or I don't know.
Trigger word, yeah, there you go. So, anyway.
So all we need is our animals being triggered, too.
Yeah. So, you wouldn't believe how much I have to go through to make postcards, but I do have postcards for you and Dave. I'll be sending those on.
I wish I wasn't so horrible with stuff like that.
Well, you'll enjoy it, and then you go, okay. And then, you know.
I have things I want to send you guys, and I got to simplify my life. Soon, when I'm retired, I will be far more aggressive with hosting things and stuff. I haven't hosted a movie for over 3 years now.
Yeah, you got to get on that, man. Get back on that
point. I know. Well, and like I said, I was telling Dave, I really enjoy what the three of us are, and hopefully four soon, are doing here, because nobody else is doing anything quite like this. Especially from the, I know some have, but not on the a regular basis. Anybody who starts now is never going to catch us.
Right.
With the amount of content we put out, or it'd take them years to, if they'd have to do it every day for years to catch us. But not that I'm trying to outpace anybody. It's just that we've got that big of a body of work. And
can't believe how many years it's been.
With that being said, I think when I start hosting again, I want to do silent movies because not too many do that. I know a few of the horror hosts. There's this guy. Look him up if you get a chance to. Lord Blood Ra. He's really cool.
Blood Ra. See where a top hat?
Yeah.
Kind of bald.
Never heard of him.
Maybe. I can't
no,
remember if he's bald
think,
or not.
I think I know who it is.
He's dark-skinned. I think he's from California.
Uh-huh.
He does full-length movies. I've seen him host, like, trailers.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has hosted a few, but not anywhere as many. But he's hosted a few old-time radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, probably just a few of the best-known ones. But
mm-hmm.
we have done a huge variety here. My God.
Yes.
And so much more to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the fun things I get involved with is, and this is almost like a craft, like I said, is where I sit down, I have to create artwork, and then I have to print, and then I have to cut, and then I have to glue and laminate and all this stuff. And then product is a nice little thing, and the folks that get them really enjoy them. So,
yeah.
That's the good part.
Yep.
This
is a good thing.
Yeah. So right now I'm in postcard production. So yeah, loads of fun.
'Tis the season.
It is, because right now we've got back to back. We're gonna have all kinds of stuff going on.
Yep.
Soon.
I love doing the radio shows on Halloween, and then if I get a chance, depends how much going on in my life, I got to catch a few of the old Universal movies every year at Halloween time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it is. I got hooked on can never remember his name. The guy that did the push-ups at the Oscars.
Jack Palance.
Jack Palance did a Dracula.
Yes.
And it is just freaking insane how good that is.
Yes, it is.
And then they also did a this is like
you
NBC
can easily
was going
see
crazy.
Him being Dracula because you know what I mean. He can go from that being distinguished to being extremely angry and dangerous.
And if you've ever seen that particular movie that of his,
I did.
The Dracula. It's like holy moly, that guy is Dracula.
Yeah.
And then NBC did that, and then at the same time in the same year. They did this, and it was like a week's worth of just horror stuff. I don't know what they were going crazy about. They did a Frankenstein that had the guy from Man from U.N.C.L.E., the Russian guy, David McCallum.
Yeah. Oh, was that Frankenstein, a true story from the 70s?
Yes. And it was like forever long
yes.
Beautiful. Can't remember her name.
Yeah,
they ripped
she
her head
was in
off.
It. And, yeah.
Yeah. And just, oh, wow, they did such a great job on it. I love that one. And there's also one by Louis Jourdan as Dracula, too. It popped up on PBS in my youth. First showing was on PBS, and I saw it, and it was just scary.
You're not doing the Roku, are you?
No.
Oh, man, there's this I found a new channel. It's so cool because it searches around and you know what I mean. You can either search by movie title and then you look at the channel that it's on and go, oh my god! So I found this one that had a bunch of 70s movies I hadn't seen in a long, long time. It has four
cool.
of the five original Planet of the Apes movies. It's got
yes, yeah. I have those in my
Silent Running with Bruce Dern.
Library.
I love that movie. I hadn't seen that in a while. So that was the first one I watched when I found the channel. It's got a couple of the Harryhausen movies, like Golden Voyage of Sinbad,
you're in Hog
Mysterious Island, First Men in the Moon. So a lot of like 60s, 70s movies. I mean, it's not all horror sci-fi. They got some Westerns
right.
and mysteries and stuff. A few
right.
here and there from the 40s and 50s movies, but mostly 60s, 70s. And I don't think there's any 80s on it. It's good stuff.
Last week, during my broadcast, I'm showing a cliffhanger serial called The G-Man versus the Black Dragon, which
yes.
is about, you know of which I speak?
I'm loosely familiar with that
Japanese spy ring.
Yeah,
Japanese spy ring, and they're against cliffhanger serial.
World War
and there
II,
was a thing
rah,
in there.
Rah, rah.
Yeah. There was a thing in there about kamikaze type stuff. And for some reason, it jumped in my head the Cheech and Chong joke about Kamikaze.
Oh,
you men are gathered together for a kamikaze mission. You will take your airplane, fly it high into the sky, and then drop it down, you know, killing yourself and all.
You audio effing mind. Yeah.
That one, that one. And yeah. I'm sitting there, you know, doing my nice little show, and all of a sudden that popped in my head, and I said, I can't tell you the punchline, but you really need to go check that out because that's really funny. but I had it. I had it in my head while I was. Dave brought his friend Mike into Harbahar a week or two ago, and I was really in good form. And so Mike got to see the broadcast as well, which is cool. I mean, I always like that. But
yeah.
I wasn't tired out of my mind. Which is
well, cool. I'm getting to that point. I'm going to
see
you next week,
my
good brother.
Go.
I got to do it with, as traditions.
Do it with your doggy.
With Jeannie Durante. Good night, folks. Thanks for
good
listening.
Night. Good night. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Ta-ta.
Good night.
Ta-ta.
It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and it could think it do. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Do you mind signing off the radio?